Tape. All right. I have. Did you? How did you get any of the prep?
No, barely any.
No, I there's too much. I just
way too much.
Too thorough. Too generous.
My brain would kept going like, man, we need to hire like researchers.
I really do need help.
What the hell? My thing's not even seeing one.
Did you?
Is it hitting?
It burns when I pee.
Is that you?
It burns when I pee. Is me.
Really?
That's my IP. Yeah.
What? Who let you in there to make something like that?
me, because I own it. I even figured out how to go into the modem, Harry.
Did you?
And turn off the...
NATing and DHCP server?
Yeah.
You turned off NATing?
Yeah. Wow. I'm the monkeys are getting advanced. They're almost typing Shakespeare.
Man, I'm scared now. You're learning to... They're not double NATing now. All right. What's the word I was looking for? Network password? Since you don't have a radio server yet?
Let's take a look here.
Because you can create a radio server eventually when you get really good, and then you can just give everyone their individual passcodes.
Well, as soon as I figure that out, then I can do it.
There's a Spangle book?
Let's see. What's our internet speed? Run test speed. Let's see here. At one point, I hit 77 down and 7 up. Daddy. Daddy.
I got a gig at work, man. I got a gig up. And a gig
you show off.
You ever did a gig? I uploaded a video for my intro to communications class. We had to do a video speech.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, this should take a while. Boom! Nope. That was almost worth saving and taking into work versus doing it at home. Because I probably would have sat in front of my computer going, argh.
Did Paul fulfill his obligation due to the public apology? Did he bring you the chair?
Yes, he did bring me the chair. And took a photo of said chair. You stood inside the your key, sir.
I'm looking. I'm trying to figure out what it is.
You forgot it. You totally forgot your key. Well, it could be something cool like Christy Avery paid for this.
She didn't, though. This is all me. I actually paid for something, Harry.
Oh, sorry.
Network settings. Network password. There you go.
Really?
Yeah, prepare to be made fun of.
Really?
Mittens, muffins, password. All lowercase. Ah, man.
My name's Chris Spangle. Welcome to the show.
Put it in just the way this thing said.
Okay.
Let me in.
I am sweating.
Thank you.
Why am
I
sweating?
Oh, did you hear about the Chinese company that copied Apple's Face ID technology?
No.
And put it on Android?
No.
It's actually very cool. I don't trust it. Because, you know, because you could tell, like, you know, it's really brilliant on how they did it, but it's like, I'll wait till Samsung gets there, buys the change copy.
Friend just texted me, do you know how to install a dishwasher?
Super easy.
Do you know how?
Super easy. It's just like standing like a cupboard. You just got to add power and water to it and then drain.
Do you think I know how?
But I do recommend getting a plumber, because if you set that up wrong... You're fucked.
That's why you shouldn't let me do it.
And it's disgusting, because it's going to back up, and it's going to be awful. But if you're comfortable with that, go ahead. Have fun.
It's not my house.
I know, right?
Not my house. Not my problem, honey.
We'll meet again. Don't know where...
What is that? Is that a waifu?
No. God, no. It's Bill Cipher? You have no idea who Bill Cipher is.
Not even close.
Ron Paul Demon?
Unless it's a waifu, I don't care. My shoes are on.
Is that what we're doing now? We taking shoes off?
Ben Shapiro has been such a cunt the last few days. I can't even listen to it.
You seen Colonel Sanders? I mean, Glenn Beck.
No.
Have you seen him?
He does. Yeah, he looks like Father Time. It's like Father Christmas.
That's like, I didn't think of that one.
Every time I see him, I'm like, oh, it's Father Christmas.
It's okay.
My
buddy Rich, I was sitting there looking at him. I was like, it's fucking dead. He was wearing his tux, walking around with his daughter. I'm like, it's fucking Daddy Warbucks. Every Halloween.
Gang violence. Initially, in these Border Patrol facilities, thanks for watching. We want to keep.
What are you saying? Are you talking? Because I have not been listening.
How the F dare you?
It's not you, it's me. You know this.
It has been this chair's all messed up. Mike's like,
well, it's your own fault, Trump. Self-inflicted wound.
How's it so?
Left me all alone with Reinhold and Galt.
That's why I leave them in their own houses to do their own setup. Because if I let them in the low-key wall studios, I have no idea what they would do. Of course, I might.
Start with masturbation. That's usually the first thing men do.
I think I might. Honestly, like, let them in eventually, because with low-key wall happening right after Liberty and Chill, if they're going to be there down the street,
yeah,
it's nothing but a hop and skip to my house.
That's from right.
But then I have to let them in my house.
Well, it's fine for you. It's whatever the boss says that is really the issue, right?
I don't have a boss.
Mm-hmm. You took vows.
So? What does it mean she's my boss?
Mm-hmm.
It's called equal equity. And being very stubborn. and both of us look at each other with nukes to be able to nuke each other. So it's kind of like, don't tread on me, I'll tread on you. You know, because, you know. One false move, and, you know, I start lighting cigars up back up again.
Oh boy.
Are you watching videos?
No, no, no. You're going to have to go in the other room.
Yeah, we got to look like professionals. Don't you go. Now you're singing. This song.
This magic moment.
That's not the song.
Little lips are closed to mine. This mitten's moment.
Initiating the launch sequence.
Almost there. So much to do.
I don't think anyone watches my Poe videos on my Poe. Did you? Because I posted that Poe video on how to take a compliment. I don't think anybody watched it.
I did not watch it, no.
How dare you.
No.
She's that libertarian British girl that I think you should slide in her DMs.
Who?
Poe.
Is she related to Poe Poe?
No.
Okay. I really cracked myself up there. That was a pure dad joke. Yeah. That was.
It's awful.
Sorry. Yep. This man. I can't spell bureaucracy, but I think I'm normal.
Here again. Slow.
Must you be a cunt all the time? I've said cunt now twice. Now three times. I apologize.
Why? It's just an acronym for can't understand normal thinking.
Wow. Is that the true origin, or is that just like a sexist joke?
It's from an army ranger, so I have no idea.
Well, then it's definitely a sexist joke.
How dare you?
Yeah, come on.
Decorated hero. Okay, uh-huh. You thank him for his service. Decorated. Why people cooking? You can't tell the difference between bird shit and food. Yes. What?
I dropped a peanut. I was outside last night, and I was enjoying a nice drumstick. You know, the ice cream cone with the peanuts.
Yeah.
Dropped one in my chair. Just went out, and ants had turned it to sawdust. I did not know ants had that kind of power.
Are you serious? You never seen ants attack something? Didn't you have an older brother?
No, I'm the oldest.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. What? Okay. Didn't you torture your little brother with ants?
No. I'm not a sadist. I know many people think I am, but I'm not. Okay. Almost ready. This magic moment.
So we got a parking ranch. We're parking downtown.
Yeah.
I'm going to park in the garage right by Regent's Tower. That's right next. That's in the tower that I work in. Mm-hmm. We want $165 a month.
Yeah, so do I, but I'm not getting it. So...
I want to park two blocks away, like 2.5 blocks away, $125 a month. This downtown thing sucks.
I know. I knew it would. I worked downtown. I hated it.
Yeah. Hate it.
Are you high or what?
No, I'm not high.
Yeah.
Because I'm black, you think I'm high?
Yes. Is that racist?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was not aware.
Oh, sweet, it's like chicks on the right. I get a script.
Ha ha ha!
Say joke. And that way, ha!
That's so true, it hurts.
Rob, play the drop. Rob, play the drop. But it's okay. On Thursdays, they have a thing called Thursday Thursday, and they have like a get together out on the deck back there.
Nice.
That's about it.
This magic moment when your lips are close to by.
I don't even get my own office after the move. They want to do this open office bullcrap. Have you here on the floor? I'm like, this is stupid. I don't want to be on the floor.
You're just inconsolable.
I am.
All right. Deep breaths.
Is that what we're doing? Deep breathing in?
I'm deep breathing right now. I'm deep breathing. I'm so depressing. Ugh. What?
The story went from interesting to depressing.
Which story?
All of this.
Yeah.
Because you look at their current situation, look at it, go like, well, this is a bull. Well, how this situation happened? Son of a bitch. You just want to go like, can't blame this on the U.S. Damn. Well, technically, it's not the U.S. domestic, as foreign policy.
Do you hear that?
Truck air braking.
Oh, I know what it is. This magic moment. Okay, are you ready? Harry, you're just a mess today.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. You know why I'm a mess and so frustrated?
Why?
It's because I had to do cable manager of the network equipment today. So all I've been doing today, right, with my massive brain, have been labeling cables with numbers and putting them into holes.
Okay.
So, you know, I haven't...
Going live. I know you're grumpy.
So, just frustrated because it was just annoying.
There we go. Well, we are live. We'll be live here in just one moment.
Bueno, aquí tenemos una orquesta.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves, while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate us and review us in iTunes and now the Google Play, the Google Podcast app, we're there. And subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff, including an extra hour this week, and then there'll be another hour of Low-Key Wall from Harry. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news in our Facebook group or Discord channel, which you can find at WeAreLibertarians.com. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. I wouldn't say it's a family show, Harry, but, you know, sometimes I can't help it. Harry Price is my co-host tonight. Harry, welcome back. It's been a nice, it's been a long month without you.
Yeah, it's been a very long month. Some of my demands still have not been met. The coffee maker has still not been installed here at the Wall Studio.
There will be no coffee.
And I'm very upset. Still upset. But, you know, decided to come back either way.
Man, I was going to make a joke that would immediately end the program, but I'm not going to. Harry, I had to keep reminding people that you were not gone because I hadn't fired another co-host or one hadn't rage quit, but you had work to do, right?
I had a lot of work to do. My company is currently moving from the east side of Indianapolis to downtown Indianapolis. So I'm trying to, you know, working with vendors, getting things moved, getting things installed, upgrading different equipment, installing different things. And that's actually what I did today. So if I seem kind of out of it, it's because I've been installing the network equipment into the rack. Well, I actually put the network equipment in there. I've just been doing the cabling today. So
right.
I've just been on, you know, looking at an imager, looking at cool designs, and making sure my cable management is perfect and beautiful and not like a gigantic rat nest just in case something happens. You know,
cable management is really important.
It is. It is. Especially if something's not going to move.
Yeah. I don't do a great job, but I do have some level of cable management. There's some Velcro ties.
Where?
You know what? I don't need judged by you. This is the problem with you IT people. You're judgy.
Whoa, first off, I'm just judgy. You know, a lot of other people like Reinhold, you know, he's very like fatherly and just go, I see what you're trying to do here. We could get you something else to help.
Right.
Yeah. Me, I'm just going to look at you like, whoa, start over. Just start over.
Now we are we're streaming to our big Facebook page.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Harry? Be honest.
Upset, you know,
betrayed, hurt.
You know, just disgusted, really.
So there's like 88,000 people on this page, I would bet that most of you have no idea that we have a podcast, that we've had a podcast for 6 years.
Right.
This is episode 294. We're dangerously close to 300. We do an episode twice a week, generally, and we basically talk about current events and apply libertarian perspectives to them, and you can find all about the podcast at WeAreLibertarians.com. We have a set of 10 principles, and we lay out what we believe and how we operate, and you can find us in any podcast app. Anywhere that you find any podcasts, I think that you will enjoy it. We try to mix humor with, you know, opinion and a variety of libertarian opinions. We are not. Harry is an anarchist.
Yes,
is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
How would you identify yourself?
You could identify me as an anarchist.
What's your liberty gender?
Yeah, I think like anarchists know. Well, if you had to put like people's like, oh, you're an anarcho-capitalist, and it's like if you have to put one, I'd go for Afro anarcho monarchism. Friendship is mandatory.
Right, and I would say that I am a constitutional libertarian. I'm almost to an anarchist. I just can't get to the private courts, but I also recognize that, hey, the reality is that probably in my lifetime we won't have an anarcho-utopia.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
In your lifetime, not in my lifetime.
So we try to have a broad range of opinion. There's about 20 millennials here in the Indianapolis area that rotate onto the podcast, and basically it's like you get to listen to a group of friends chat about politics, and you get to join in, and we would love to have you subscribe to the podcast and go through the back archives, and I think you'll see tonight, I put our prep doc, something I've never done before, I put a prep doc in one of our notes, so if you're on the Facebook page and you go to the notes tab, you'll see the prep doc with literally 200 links to articles. I didn't read all of them, I read about 50 different articles trying to get
at the meat of this thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot of opinions, there's a lot of biases, there's a lot going on here, and there are going to be points where we kind of repeat some of the same information just to kind of give you a perspective. But we wanted to put it up on the big Facebook page because, frankly, we wanted you to know that we have a podcast, which is the main thing that we do. The Facebook page at this point, I'm going to be very candid with you. We just shitpost on and post memes. And Stone Aldridge is our social media manager and does a great job posting memes on our Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And because that prep doc spent hours researching, trying to find what was the right information.
Mm-hmm.
I probably shouldn't do this on camera too much, Harry.
But screenshot it.
Trying to...
what do you think I was trying to do? Get on YouTube?
So,
this real quick.
You know, hours into researching and trying to find out the truth and figure this out, and you put this all together and you post it, and you're like, well, surely people are going to love this. 4 shares, 100, several likes, better than the normal 2 that we would get on something that is an actual piece of research. The reason I hate our Facebook page, and I don't think that this is our people. If you like our page and you're watching, it's not you. It's just generally Facebook. Is that if we post something that is a serious piece of research or an article with a well-thought-out opinion based on years of political experience, I've worked in politics and media for 15 years. I've worked for the Libertarian Party for 4. Mm-hmm. I've worked for news talk shows as a reporter for 4. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You're just wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. I read this thing on patriotpost.us. And people on our Facebook page and mostly the internet don't want actual information. They just want shit memes to argue over because they want themselves to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate it. And then we get these long-winded, I'm unfollowing you guys because you don't represent libertarianism very well. It's like you wouldn't know libertarianism if it came up and crawled up your behind. So I'm grumpy about it.
Yeah.
So mainly I just wanted to do a Facebook Live here to tell we've already lost like 40 people, which is what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
Stone grew the page like 2,000 in a couple days, and then I lost us 1,000 in the next.
Yeah, by posting like one meme. Not even a meme, like an article.
An article. So I would love the tenor of our Facebook page to match our podcast is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't want that.
And that's the other thing weird is like when it's like you can post like a awful meme, like just a dumb meme. It's funny. If you're in
pixelated,
the know.
Pixelated.
Yeah.
It's been downloaded and shared 400 times.
That they want research, and that's where the people want the hard-ed research. This is false, and this is fake news. Did it? It was like, where was you on the article that we spent time actually going over and researching and looking at? Nah, screw that.
Fuck.
This meme you did in MS Paint real quick on the toilet? Oh, yeah, this is what we're going to argue about.
Yeah. It just explodes. Yeah.
And then, like, the worst about it is because, like, you get these ridiculous, like, people talking about, like, well, some of the younger people who are new to politics are not going to know about this. Trust me, the younger person in the audience that is watching this podcast knows how to right click and reverse image search. Okay,
right.
Trust me, they can reverse image search all memes to validate all memes that make claims. This was to make fun. Okay,
I know. We try to be funny and we try like use the page mostly just to share memes because they're funny and that are politically related, hoping that maybe you'll see the name and connect that we have a podcast, but I don't know that I've ever met anybody who, if you are one of those people who follows the podcast because of the Facebook page, that's how you found us, let me know. But most people just find us on iTunes. But
yeah.
So we wanted to say welcome to the Facebook people, and I figured I have a lot to say about the border separations. I have done a lot of research on it, trying to figure out what's going on. And this is a hot topic that not a lot of I've sensed the hunger for information from regular people. So I am here to talk to the regular people.
Yeah.
All right. I'm here to talk to the people who want to know what's going on, who are not just here to be anti-left or anti-right.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, it doesn't matter what. So some of these people that you argue with on Facebook about this, it's, well, the Democrats did it. It's like, well, okay, no, the Democrats didn't do it. Here's the 15 reasons why, and that's the thing about immigration. And it happens when you argue with partisans on both sides of the issue, is they never, that's why it's a waste of time really to argue too much on Facebook, because they're never going to change their mind. There's actual studies that show arguing on Facebook completely is a waste of time. Like, it just, you're never going to change that person's mind. There is some value in people reading the thread mm-hmm. and the comments and the arguments back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it can help, like, a lot of this show and what information I pulled is really to, was helpful to see what other people were saying. But on immigration specifically, it's one of those things where if you have somebody present a concern or an argument, and then you give them information that satisfies the question, they then switch to another question or concern.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you answer that, then they go to another one.
Right.
And it's just, it, like, there's never a resolution. It's always, I'm just going to be anti-immigrant. And, like, at a certain point, you go, okay, you're not looking at this from a perspective of what economics might say or what statistics say or what government officials or charities say. Like, you're just stuck in this mode of thinking.
Or past choices that you have made personally and or decisions that you have made. Like, right. Everything you can talk to about someone on the past, you try to take those exact same positions that they have and, like, okay, now let's go to this same situation and apply your exact same principles that you claim to have, and you flipped. You flipped. You're like, nope, now you see it this way. Now you see the government needs to have power, and now you're ready to full-on state control, needs to control this thing, and, you know, before you were crying, you cry small government libertarianism, government needs to get out of the way on everything else.
Now, I'm not an open borders person completely.
Okay.
And we will talk about open borders, closed borders, immigration policy after we talk about child separation.
Mm-hmm.
But for all the bias hunters out there who can't stand to listen to anything without knowing where the people stand first.
Okay.
I would definitely, I think this episode completely illustrates closed borders are a fantasy and are inhumane, but I'm open borders in the sense that I don't believe that you should, just in the way that I don't believe that I should be able to tell Harry what he can and can't buy, I shouldn't be allowed to tell Harry who he can and can't employ. So labor coming into this country, when you increase the labor supply, then you increase the demand for jobs, you increase the demand for goods because those people in those new jobs are buying goods.
Mm-hmm.
You look at women coming into the workforce from the 50s through the 90s, they created entire new industries like the nonprofit industry. The economy didn't suffer. So, but I do have a sticking point. I do think there should be a citizenship test. So when it comes to voting, for instance, that is I'm a little bit more of a stickler. So I would be in favor of a work visa program. I think what Bush outlined in 2006 was pretty decent. I think you disagree with me.
No. I see that because citizenship is more of like a club membership, and as you vote for parts of a club,
right.
That makes sense. I can see that.
From a pure libertarian standpoint, libertarianism is about open borders.
Yeah.
And yes. I'm flat out telling you that I'm giving you the compromise position
mm-hmm.
In what I outline. But the pure libertarian perspective is that You shouldn't put any boundary on the flow of migrants in any way, because as people leave for new economic opportunities grow.
Doing that, you're just putting a block on the flow of the market.
Right.
You're putting basically price controls in place. It's a different word for price control.
Borders are tariffs.
Yeah, they're just tariffs.
They're tariffs on people and labor.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where we're at in terms of bias. Okay. Now, so that is where we're going. Go ahead.
I'm an open borders kind of person,
mm-hmm.
just like Chris says. I actually found myself almost agreeing right there with that incomplete statement.
Right.
I was like, yeah, I can agree with that full statement. Oh, then the government controls and stuff like that. But that all makes sense.
Right.
That's all perfectly fine.
Like
and the understanding that all that other stuff does not happen in a vacuum.
Right. So let's talk about that. But to me, this issue, I will get to it after we kind of give you the facts of what's going on. To me, this is not an immigration issue. This is really about principles and values about what this country stands for and how we treat people. And so it's less about immigration. And everybody wants to argue about immigration, and I don't want to argue that. I'm like, But we'll get to that. Let me give you the facts from the Washington Post and Vox. These are the two who wrote it the clearest and the only ones who really wrote out the laws. Rich Lowry from National Review also wrote out about the laws, but Lowry really spun it in a way that was favorable to closed borders Republican politics. And when you hear the facts, you kind of we'll look through his piece a little later and you'll kind of hear the bias creeping in exactly how he wrote it. So this is from the 1776 Lockdown This Bitch. Bruh, do you understand anything about the founding of this country? When you are... Harry. 1776, lock this bitch. This is why we shouldn't be doing this on the big Facebook page, because you people aren't ready for freedom. My people came over from Germany in the mid-1800s as part of the migration in the mid-1800s that gave America the labor force to have an industrial revolution, for instance. The immigration to start keeping people of different ethnicities out of this country began in the 20s. Okay? So before that, America was fairly open borders. Remember Ellis Island? That's pretty much how it happened.
Yeah.
So 1776, lock this bitch down, not historically accurate.
Yeah,
I invite you to know what you believe.
Yeah, and being historically accurate, like James Neese went off into a tangent. It was like, it's also not unusual for the United States to have people having like whole territories speaking a different language.
All right. So in that prep doc, I have put these articles and I put a ton of videos, podcasts about this, other articles from both the right, the left, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, debates about immigration. You can see that in the notes tab on the Facebook page or at WeAreLibertarians.com if you're listening later on the episode. So I have given you literally every single decent piece and argument about this entire issue in that document. All right, so you can go and fact check me till you're blue in the face with my own research. All right, but so out of all of that, I'm presenting to you the articles that give you the consensus view of what's actually happening. Reporters who are on the ground in the area, people who are researching the law, trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So the facts about Trump. This is from the Washington Post. The facts about Trump's policy of separating families at the border. So they write, the president and top administration officials say that U.S. laws or court rulings are forcing them to separate families that are caught trying to cross the southern border. These claims are not true. Immigrant families are being separated primarily because the Trump administration in April began to prosecute as many border crossing offenses as possible. This quote-unquote zero tolerance policy applies to all adults regardless of whether they cross alone or with their children. Now, it's in quotes because the zero-tolerance policy came from Stephen Miller, who is the 32-year-old advisor to the president who is reportedly the architect of this particular piece. He believes that 90% of Americans, if immigration is the central issue, that 90% of Americans will vote for Trump's side on immigration. And so let's all realize that both sides are playing politics with this.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans are trying to look tough on the border before the midterms because Trump and Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions, who Stephen Miller used to work for, all believe that immigration is a winning issue. And with no border wall being built, they want to look tough on immigration. And so they have changed their policy in the last 4 months to this zero tolerance policy in an effort to look good in the midterms. On the other side of the aisle, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are not allowing a vote and holding votes on DACA recipients from passing because they believe that it looks bad for the president that he will soon start deporting DACA students, and they want to make the president look bad. So both sides are playing politics with this, and your Facebook friends are blaming Chuck Schumer or they're blaming Donald Trump. They're both wrong. All right, as usual. The Justice Department can't prosecute children, the Washington Post writes, along with their parents, so the natural result of the zero-tolerance policy has been a sharp rise in family separations. Nearly 2,000 immigrant children were separated from parents during 6 weeks in April and May, according to the Department of Homeland Security. The Trump administration implemented this policy by choice and could end it by choice. No law or court ruling mandates family separations. Let me read that again. No law or court ruling mandates family separations, despite what your Facebook friends have said. And I will explain that to you in the coming paragraphs. In fact, during the first 15 months, the Trump administration released nearly 100,000 immigrants who were apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border, including a total of 337,500 unaccompanied minors and more than 6,100 family members. Children continue to be released to their relatives or to shelters, but since the zero-tolerance policy took effect, parents, as a rule, are being prosecuted. Any conviction in these proceedings would be grounds for deportations. So the change in policy is not any policy or law or court ruling or anything in the last 4 months. The only thing that has changed is that the Trump administration is now treating anyone who crosses the border as someone who broke the law. Now, crossing the border is a misdemeanor offense. Okay. And the way that you were supposed to come in is you were supposed to walk up, present yourself to a point of entry, and say that you are seeking asylum, which we will explain. And so the controversy surrounding the children specifically are families who are seeking asylum. And the Trump administration last 4 months has made an insidious change, meaning a bad change, that they are not allowing people to seek asylum, which is technically against American law and international law that Americans helped craft. So a misdemeanor is, for a first-time crossing offense, it's like a speeding ticket. If you're a second time or multiple time trying to re-enter, then that is a felony charge. Shooting down. The Justice Department under Obama prioritized the deportation of dangerous people. Once he took office, Trump issued an executive order rolling back much of the Obama-era framework. Obama's guidelines prioritized the deportation of gang members, those who posed a national security risk, and those who had committed felonies. Trump's January 2017 executive order does not include a priority list for deportations and refers only to criminal offenses, which is broad enough to encompass serious felonies as well as misdemeanors. Then in April 2018, Attorney General Jeff Sessions rolled out the zero-tolerance policy. When families or individuals are apprehended by Border Patrol, they're taken to DHS custody. So, again, April 2018, they changed the law, and they apprehend anybody who crosses in. They go into DHS, Department of Homeland Security custody. DHS officials refer any adult, quote-unquote, believed to have committed any crime, including illegal entry, to the Justice Department for prosecution. If they're convicted, they're usually sentenced to time served. The next step would be deportation proceedings. Illegal entry is a misdemeanor for first-time offenses. A DHS fact sheet says any individual processed for removal, including those who are criminally prosecuted for illegal entry, may seek asylum or other protection available under the law. Families are essentially put on two tracks. One track ends with deportation, the other doesn't. After a holding period, DHS transfers children to the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement in the Department of Health and Human Services. They spend an average of 51 days at an ORR shelter before they're placed with a sponsor in the United States, according to the Health and Human Services. The government is required to place these children with family members whenever possible, even if those family members might be undocumented immigrants. So the hilarious part is that when the parent is taken to a lockup, and essentially what's happening there, they are taking, when you walk in, and let's say, you know, Harry and I walk in, mm-hmm. and he's got his wife and his daughter,
Gunther.
I almost called her Gunther. So there. I threw myself off. I'm sorry, Harry. So Harry walks in with his wife and his newborn daughter, year old daughter. Mm-hmm. And then I walk in with my nieces who are 2 and 4. Okay. Now, Harry and I would go into a pen together mm-hmm. because we're two men.
Right.
Your wife would then go into a pen mm-hmm. in some facilities. The one-year-old would be allowed to stay with the mother. Mm-hmm. If they're breastfeeding, in most cases, they get to stay. In some cases, depending on the border guards mm-hmm. and how nice the border guards are, i.e. policemen, the one-year-old will be in a basically a cell, you know, a chain-link fence with netting over the top mm-hmm. with other female children. So they put women... adult women, adult men, young boys, young girls, in 4 separate groups. So my 2-year-old niece and my 4-year-old niece would almost certainly be in the pen with the young women. Not with me, not with even women. They would be alone together. And according to government policy, they're not allowed to touch.
So like some weird... Children of the Flies.
That's how it breaks down. Okay. And so like everybody freaked out over all those images in 2014 of the kids in the dog kennels mm-hmm. Under the Obama administration. And then it turned out that was from 2014 and everybody acted all self-righteous saying, huh, that's 2014. How dare you share fake news? That's what actually is happening.
It still is. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's just, that's just the most updated because they stopped photos being taken there in 2014.
They don't allow... Press they in. Just now are letting press in, but they're not allowed to bring cameras or photos. Any photo you've seen has been released by the government. They're now, just now in this past week, letting in legislators and senators. So,
got to make the re-election rounds.
Yeah, right. Politicians grandstanding. So. There is something called the Flores decision. We'll get to that. Let's just keep going on this story, and I'll fill in the facts as we go. So after they spend an average of 51 days, then they're placed with family. Adding it all up, this means the Trump administration is operating a system in which immigrant families that are apprehended at the border get split up. Because children go into a process in which they eventually get placed with sponsors in the country while their parents are prosecuted and potentially deported. This is a question of Trump and his cabinet choosing to enforce some laws over other. The legal landscape did not change, and the Trump administration released nearly 100,000 immigrants during its first 15 months. Then they changed the policy, my editor's note, just in time for the midterms. What changed was the handling of these cases. Undocumented immigrant families seeking asylum previously were released and went into the civil court system. But now the parents are being detained and sent to criminal courts, while their kids are resettled in the United States as though they were unaccompanied minors. The government has limited resources, and so they cannot prosecute every crime, so setting up a system that prioritizes the prosecution of some offenses over others is a policy choice. So, in other words, they are choosing... You have to... Everybody who is screaming, the law, the law, the law, I'm seeing, you know, it all roll through the comments, right. And it's nothing but they broke the law, send them back. Your cousin gets busted for pot. Well... There's multiple ways. How many of you have had a family member busted for drunk driving? Do you have a family member, Harry, that's been arrested for anything?
Yeah, drunk driving with dad, yeah.
Okay. So dad goes before the court, mm-hmm. and there's multiple choices at different levels, okay? So when your dad goes before the prosecutor, depending on multiple factors, being his first offense, or is he going through counseling? Has he gone through a diversion program? Is he an upstanding member of the community? Did he hire enough lawyers to help him get off? Mm-hmm. there's a Netflix show right now called The Staircase, and it's basically like this guy just buys $1 million worth of lawyers. It's amazing how much it cost to buy back your freedom. So the prosecutor can then decide what crime to charge the person with. And then you go to trial, and along the way, there could be a plea deal, or there could be a lessening of charges, or a removal of charges, or even an adding of charges along the way. Then they go before the judge. The judge then has the ability to alter any of those agreements, and then decides how to sentence people. So it is very easy to sit there and say, well, they drunk drove, so they broke the law. Slam the book at them. Okay, but there's multiple factors involved in any criminal prosecution or even any civil prosecution. There's a bunch of different aggravating factors that go into every decision. And so what Donald Trump has decided to do is throw the maximum penalty at every drunk driver. Your cousin gets you get busted for pot. You know, you could be facing 3 to 5 years for possessing marijuana, and they could attack on an intent to distribute charge for fun. And you could be facing 3 to 5 years for a felony, but then you only get charged with misdemeanor possession. Okay? Should a person who is buying pot be in jail for 3 to 5 years? The societal costs of locking every single person up and giving them all the maximum penalty is massive.
Right.
The cost of detaining all these children is extraordinary. There's an article somewhere in my prep. The actual cost. I don't think I have it.
Not out. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like the budget they're blowing through.
Yeah.
It's up in the it's six figures.
So
they're just blowing through it. Quick.
So this is the one place where I see a lot of people say they broke the law because they think it's very black and white, and you don't understand shit about the law, frankly. And you sound like a dumbass to those of us who do understand how the law operates. And you have to understand that when you commit a crime, there's so many different choices that a government can make in how they prosecute that crime. And so what the Donald Trump administration has chosen to do is take a very radical approach in not only violating American law, but also international law on how we handle asylum seekers, but also in effectively closing the border in multiple ways, which we'll explain in just a moment. So yes, they broke the law, but in the same way that you break the law when you don't wear your seatbelt, it's literally legally at the same level.
Yeah.
Of crime.
Yeah.
So you get caught with a speeding ticket that's non-felonious, and we get to come in and take your kids.
Yeah. Making Facebook comments while you're driving.
Right. He's giving felonies for misdemeanors. That's basically whoever that is. I can't see who is commenting, but you're right.
Yeah.
So the Department of Homeland Security sent a number to the Washington Post. Waldman sent figures from fiscal 2010 through 2016 showing that out of 2.3 million adults apprehended at the southern border, nearly 500,000 or 21% were referred for prosecution. So during the Obama administration from 2010 to 2016, and you know how you all post how Barack Obama deported more people than anybody else, 21% were actually prosecuted. So in the old days, you could basically get picked up, and then you would be granted a civil court hearing for asylum. They would hear your asylum case. You would either get to stay, or you'd have to go back. Now, everybody's going back, as close to 100% as they can manage, instead of 21%. So that's why this has become a crisis, because it's the order of magnitude of more people that are being apprehended and held, and it fills up. There's 57, I think, a day. I saw some number that it's, 45 children are being taken from their parents each day. So it's a massive number of people as opposed to the brief period. So the other misnomer that you keep hearing, the other falsehood that you keep hearing is that this has gone on forever. It's not gone on forever. There was a brief period during the Obama administration that this did happen in 2014. And it was an extraordinary outrage. It was a big, big cry. Glenn Beck and Ted Cruz took teddy bears to the border zone. And it only lasted a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't gone on forever. Again, your Facebook friends are wrong. So the administration officials have pointed to a set of laws and court rulings that they said forced their hand. A 1997 federal consent decree that requires the government to release all children apprehended crossing the border, the Flores consent decree, began as a class action lawsuit. The Justice Department negotiated a settlement during President Bill Clinton's administration. According to a 2016 decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth District, and I would say the most liberal of the circuit court judges, the Flores settlement requires that the federal government release rather than detain all undocumented immigrant children, whether they cross the border with parents or alone. The agreement doesn't cover any parents who might be accompanying those minors, but it doesn't mandate that the parents be prosecuted or that the families be separated. Moreover, Congress could pass a law that overrides the terms of the Flores settlement. Waldman said that the Flores settlement requires the government to keep immigrant families together for only 20 days, but no part of the consent decree requires that families be separated after 20 days. Courts have ruled that children must be released from detention facilities within 20 days under the Flores consent decree, but none of these legal developments prevent the government from releasing the parents along with the children. The other law that they cite is the 2008 human trafficking law called the TVPRA, the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act, which was signed by President George W. Bush. This law covers children of all nationalities except Canadians and Mexicans. Central American children who are apprehended trying to enter the U.S. must be released rather than detained under the terms of the TVPRA, and they're exempt from prompt return to their home countries. The law passed with wide bipartisan support and was signed by George Bush. Now, the origin of all of these laws is the 1952 Immigration and Nationality Act. So Mr. 1776, who claims that the country was founded on closed borders, the modern immigration system was founded in 1952, essentially, under the Immigration and Nationality Act. This comprehensive law governs U.S. immigration and citizenship and makes a person's first illegal entry into the United States a misdemeanor. Clinton, Bush, and Obama, the presidents who were in office during the immigration boom of the past few decades, never enforced the INA's illegal entry provision with the Trump administration's zeal. The INA says nothing about separating families. It was sponsored by Democrats and passed by a Democratic-held Congress. Harry Truman, also a Democrat, tried to veto the bill, but saying that it was a reactionary and un-American measure meant to keep out immigrants from Eastern Europe who are fleeing communism. Congress overrode his veto. So what you have is they kind of highlight the silliness of the way that the administration, there are three different arguments coming from the administration on this policy. And it really shows you the absolute incompetence with which the Donald Trump administration governs.
Oh, yeah. Most government handles incompetence. But the other thing is, like, it also, like, this entire thing just, like, to me, it just keep, it's not, no one's looking at, like, the numbers are adding up. Because the thing is, right, yes, the families are being separated, but according to everything I'm seeing, is that means the kids are being left in the United States and the parents are being sent back.
Yes. So
now you've got kids here, right, that they're here in the United States with a lot of the Dreamer Acts going things going through. Mm-hmm. They probably are going to get their citizenship here in the United States. So their parents are going to come in that way.
We will.
Very long and convoluted, but like, you just backdoored them in.
We're just now talking about the child separation. There's so many different layers to this.
Wait until
we get to
I put my chip down too far in that layer dip.
Wait until we get to what happens after this 20 days is amazing.
Yeah.
So the three different strains of argument coming from the administration. Trump is distancing himself, saying the Democrats gave us this law. Nielsen, the Department of Homeland Security secretary, says it's not a policy. And the reason she's saying it's not a policy is that if the Trump administration is sued, it's much harder for basically what the Trump administration is saying, that this is a consequence of these other two laws. And we're just enforcing the original INS or the INA Act as it was written. We're enforcing the laws where other administrations have not enforced the law. And we are beholden by the Flores Decree and the TVPRA. And this is just a consequence. It's not a brand new policy. We are not dictating that children be separated. It's just a consequence, not a policy. Because it's harder to sue a consequence, right, than right. It is a policy. If it's a forethought-out, intentional piece of legislation as opposed to just a bad act, a bad outcome, then it's a harder case to make for the opposition. So that's why she's claiming that it's not happening, it doesn't exist. And Sessions, the attorney general, is basically like vigorously defending it. So we do have a policy of prosecuting adults who flout our laws to come here illegally instead of waiting their turn to claim or claiming asylum at a port of entry. Jeff Sessions said, we cannot and will not encourage people to bring children by giving them blanket immunity from our laws. In another speech on June 7th, he says, I hope that we don't have to separate any more children from any more adults, but there's only one way to ensure that is the case. It's for people to stop smuggling children illegal. Stop crossing the border illegally with your children. Apply to enter lawfully. Wait your turn. The Attorney General also suggested on June 7th that the legal developments are forcing his hand because of the Flores Decree. Essentially, for Trump, this is leverage that he is using to get congressional funding for the promised borders. So all of this is doublespeak. It's Orwellian doublespeak that is meant to confuse and is just a very crass way of constructing policy. And, you know, they're not taking Donald Trump is not taking any responsibility at all. And I think it's because the public backlash really caught him off guard.
Right. He wasn't expecting this.
Right.
He wasn't expecting people to just to, you know, do that drive by, like just hear numbers, understand that, look how many people they're keeping out. But what they was not prepared for was the PR backlash of people seeing kids being separated from their families, but even at a young age. Like people, you know, if it was just like, you know, the 15 to 18 year old kids, you know, like high schoolers, but the babies and the, you know, the tweens and the little ones are still with their moms and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be less backlash.
Right.
But for the simple fact that, because I know myself, I'm thinking like, I'd be damned if I'd be separated from my 1 year old like that.
Absolutely. Well, that's part of the problem is I don't think people are. I certainly don't think that Donald Trump views them as human beings. Do you?
I don't know. I don't know if he does. I don't think he does.
I don't know. Here's what I
don't know.
I think that Donald Trump, if Donald Trump were flown to Brownsville, Texas today, and he were walking through there, Donald Trump would change his policy immediately.
Oh, instantly.
I think that Donald Trump, I do think on some level he's a total sociopath, and he's in a lot of ways incapable of the emotional, of empathy and in many ways that narcissists are. But there is a thing with Donald Trump that when he sees something like children crying in person, it changes. It's like he wants to make a change and fix it. He wants people. He's kind of like.
Well, he's done this before in the past. Right. He did this in 20 when he first got elected. That once you know, like with this the gas attack, it's like once you see these kids like this, you have to act.
Yeah.
And I think either he's not being shown or lied to the situation that's going down there.
Right. So,
because they know he would act, because he's still human, even after all those traits, we know that he's human, and he does not like seeing kids hurt.
Right. So that, but at the same time, he's shielded from a lot of that because I think he has people around him who have just a vested interest in.
Yeah,
you know, like Stephen Miller, this is he's beating off to the coverage every night.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is just who he is. Something we'll touch on again later. This is from a Vox article called "Family Separation at the Border: What You Need to Know About Trump's Alarming Immigration Policy." According to federal defenders, some Border Patrol agents are lying to families about why and how long they're being separated. A federal defender told the Washington Post's Michael E. Miller that parents were told their children were just being taken away briefly for questioning. Liz Goodwin of the Boston Globe cites a defender saying that in several cases, the children were taken by Border Patrol agents who said they were just going to give them a bath. As the hours passed, it dawned on the mothers of the kids that they weren't coming back. So when you're in the detention facility and you are separated, here is how they actually get the kids away from the mothers. So I read this last night, and I've been passionate about this, and I will explain why soon, but this is, if you're a parent, this is tough to hear. So let me find the actual piece here. I apologize. Harry, how are you doing today?
You're fine. I've actually been like going through here, like also pulling up different cool little quotes and not quotes, but chat comments and saving them for later. And then right now I've been also been pulling up little things to help like educate some of these people.
All right. So here's what we'll do.
Whole idea of the U.S. Constitution only applies to U.S. citizens, which is that's a falsehood. It's
all right. So if you leave a comment on the Facebook page there, then we will answer your questions and discuss sort of what you're saying towards the end of the episode. I will also say that if you're a Patreon subscriber, we have a Patreon, which you can find at wearelibertarians.com. $10 a month and up, you get to watch every show live like this, and you get to comment in the chat room. So this is from a great article. Like, if you want one article that breaks everything down completely, it is this TexasMonthly.com is where you should go for your coverage. No one has had better coverage from both the human angle, the legal angle, on the ground reporting than Texas Monthly. It's a magazine in Texas. Man, they get a lot of pickup truck money, and they are well funded. They're a great magazine, and they have done great reporting on this. And this article is an interview with someone from the Tahira Justice Center, which I have linked in our show notes. And they're basically a legal defense fund for people trying to navigate asylum in the United States. And this is a long article, but it really lays out everything that's happening in a much, I think, more personal way than that Washington Post article. So if you only have the attention to read one thing, or if you want to share what's going on, what's really happening when asylum-seeking families are separated, on June 15th at TexasMonthly.com is your article. So for you rule of law folks, here's the thing. Here's a huge part of all of the problem with this is, and this is one of the fundamental problems with Donald Trump and his administration, and this is one of the problems of complete inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
And any libertarian president or libertarian candidate that got elected would probably fall into some of these same traps. When you go to execute a policy, you can't just decree it so. You can't just say, I speak this into existence, let's make it happen. And that's kind of what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump just decided, and along with Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller, that they were going to do this, and they kind of let the chips fall where they may. They didn't increase the amount of shelters. They didn't lay down guidelines for Border Patrol. They didn't lay down guidelines for DHS, ORR, or any of these other agencies.
Right.
They didn't prepare anyone for anything. They just changed the policy and let it happen.
Correct.
And what you have, you follow the law people, is you don't end up in that situation with people executing the law. You end up with rule of man. So the difference between the rule of law is that society agrees upon a certain amount of things, a certain set of standards, a certain set of laws and principles, and these are the laws that we're all going to obey, and the laws are clearly written on how those will be executed, and here are the penalties if you don't. Rule of man is when men in the moment are making up whatever they want to make up. See if you hear that in this. So again, this is an interview with Ann Chandler.
Should I tweet it first? That makes it law.
So what is the process for separation? There is no process. Judging from the mothers and fathers I've spoken to and those staff that I've spoken to, there are several different processes. Now, again, this is a woman who is directly interacting with all of the people that are in the news as they try to get asylum. She's their lawyer. So she's on the ground and in the actual holding facilities, knows all the border agents, all that stuff. That's why Texas Monthly is great. They're on the ground and they know who to talk to, so they've talked to all the right people.
Mm-hmm.
There are several different processes. Sometimes they will tell the parent, we're taking your child away. And when the parent asks, when will I get them back? They say, we can't tell you that. Sometimes the officers will say, because you're going to be prosecuted, or because you're not welcome in this country, or because we're separating them, without giving them a clear justification. In other cases, we see no communication that the parent knows that their child is to be taken away. Instead, the officers say, I'm going to take your child to get bathed. That's one we see again and again. Your child needs to come with me for a bath. That's not disturbing. The child goes off, and in a half an hour, 20 minutes, and the parent inquires, where's my 5-year-old? Where's my 7-year-old? This is a long bath. And they say, you won't be seeing your child again. Sometimes mothers, I was talking to one mother and she said, don't take my child away. And the child started screaming and vomiting and crying hysterically. And she asked the officers, can I at least have 5 minutes to console her? They said no. In another case, the father said, can I comfort my child? Can I hold him for a few minutes? The officer said, you must let them go. And if you don't let them go, I will write you up for an altercation, which means that you are the one that had the additional charges charged against you. So threats. So the father just let the child go. So it's a lot of variations. But sometimes deceit and sometimes direct. And just, I'm taking your child away. Parents are not getting any information on what their rights are to communicate to get their child before they are deported, what reunification may look like. We spoke to 9 parents on this Monday, which was the 11th. And these were adults in the detention centers outside of Houston. They've been separated from their child between May 23rd and May 25th, and as of June 11th, not one of them had been able to talk to their child or knew a phone number that functioned from the detention center director. None of them had direct information from immigration on where their child was located. The one number they were given by some government official from the Department of Homeland Security was a 1-800 number. But the phones inside the detention center, they can't make those calls. We know there are more parents who are being deported without their child, without any process or information on how to get their child back. Texas Monthly. So it's entirely possible that children will be left in the country without any relatives? Could be, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if the child is, say, 5 years old, the child is going through deportation proceedings. So the likelihood that the child is going to be deported is pretty high because they know they're going to ask for asylum. I apologize. I skipped to the wrong page. How do they know where to deport their child to or who the parents are? Well, how does the child navigate their deportation case without their parent around? Well, Texas Monthly says because a 5-year-old doesn't necessarily know his parents' information. And says, in the shelters, they can't even find the parents because the kids are just crying inconsolably. They often don't know the full legal name of their parents or their date of birth. They're not in a position to share a trauma story like what caused the migration, so they can't even ask for asylum. These kids and parents had no idea. None of the parents I talked to were expecting to be separated as they faced the process of asking for asylum. You'd think there'd be some sort of wristband or something with their information on it.
Mm-hmm.
And says, I think the Department of Homeland Security gives the kids an alien number. They also give the parents an alien number and probably have that information. The issue is that the Department of Homeland Security is not the one caring for the child. Jurisdiction of that child has moved over to Health and Human Services. And the Health and Human Services staff has to figure out where is this parent, and that's not easy. Sometimes the parents are deported. Kids are in New York and Miami. We've got parents being sent to Tacoma, Washington, and California. Talk about a mess. And nobody has a right to an attorney here. Nobody here has the right to an attorney, she says.
What?
These kids don't get a paid advocate or an ad litem or a friend of the court. They don't get a paid attorney to represent them. Some find that because there are programs, but that's not a right. It's not universal. So, Harry, as a parent, what do you think about that?
It makes me sick to my stomach because, like, even like when we go to the hospital with Gunther, when they take her and they've got to take her either like away from us or something like that, they wristband our child and they wristband my wife and I with the exact same copy of the duplicate wristband. Because our daughter's not going to know our information. So they make sure that I have the copy of the same wristband that's on her.
Right.
Makes everything simple. But they're used to dealing with that type of situation. They've gone through this. They're also a private entity, being a hospital. Well, public, private, you know, because it's a hospital. But it's just... And then to... Sorry, the comment section on here is just like brutal.
Listen, these people are not MS-13, okay?
Yeah.
But the kid that is separated from his parents and massive trauma is happening to him at 3 years old because he's separated from his parents for 70 days.
Yeah.
That's the kid that grows up to be MS-13.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fucking moron.
Oh, yeah. That's the kid that grows up on the streets without, has, I don't know who my parents are, gets deported to go back to El Salvador and just, you know, gets into the cycle of violence that the parents
I can't imagine that I would grow up angry at the United States government if I were these people.
Pretty much. Pretty much. But yeah, it's that type of... It's very short-sighted and it's typical of government thinking that, oh, we're just going to do this. But the other thing was like is also like not knowing the area too when they set forth this policy. You can tell that someone has never been down there or understood what is going on. And also, given the benefit of the doubt, didn't understand like a ramp-up was going to happen in the past like month that it has happened.
Yeah.
They had no idea some of this stuff.
Everybody was completely unprepared for this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And even like El Salvador was unprepared for like a lot of the disasters they've been been facing. They have no idea where most of their people have went because of the stuff that's going on.
Right. This is not MS-13. That's not how this works.
Yeah, yeah. And okay. MS-13 was formed because of gang members going into this. People from those Latin communities being placed in the jail system, and they formed a small gang to protect them from the Crips and the Bloods. And then when the American immigration policy changed in the 90s, started to deport a lot of these people who were part of the same gang back to the home country that they have never been to because they were kids when they were brought over here, and they were brought there, and they brought that same gang mentality back there with them that they learned from the Crips and the Bloods.
Yeah.
So basically, American domestic policy created MS-13.
In an indirect way, absolutely.
I'm not saying that it's the sole provider.
You're blaming America.
It's a catalyst. It was a catalyst. It's a catalyst. It's a catalyst. This is the same way.
You're just a Soros libertarian.
It's the same way the catalyst that the United States have invented most gangs and stuff like that. It's the same way. It's like the Crips and the Bloods were created to protect themselves from different organizations, police or just low-ridden crime areas, but then the United States government with a prohibition on illegal drugs made it profitable to trade in illegal drugs and people. So that's what they did. So they was a catalyst of creating these two massive gangs.
So also
like the in the 1920s, they're a catalyst on the Italian mafia.
So I want to keep giving a few more facts. There's still more facts to this. And then we're going to continue on in that vein, and we're going to explain how we got here, where we're going, how this we're going to talk about a lot. We're going to talk about the war on drugs and its effect and all this, because there's a lot of layers to the analysis to this. But I want to get the facts on the table first. So I want to read you a pediatrician's view into a Border Patrol processing center. This was posted today by Marsha. It was an interview by Texas Monthly by Marsha Griffin, co-chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She is a part of that group, a special interest group on immigrant health, and her job is to work with 500 pediatricians to study the effects of basically they study the kids who grow up in these traumatic environments back in Central American countries and then talk with the 66,000 pediatricians in their group about how to specially care for these kids. So she has been inside of these detainment facilities a lot, and she does say that maybe we should go to the beginning here before.
Yeah.
Maybe walk through the process. Let me go here. And we'll kind of get to more facts as we go along.
Yeah, the bean dip is as deep, isn't it?
So I'm going to stick with what I wrote out, and I'm going to stick with the actual show notes that I put together here instead of getting ADD. But I think fundamentally you have to when I look at news stories, I look at it from a libertarian perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the libertarian perspective says people first. Okay, when we're interacting with others, it is how do you and I interact in an individual way? How do we interact with our government?
Mm-hmm.
And when we are involved in politics and politicians and votes and policies and our tax dollars are all an extension of our values, not as a collective we, but as an individual we.
Mm-hmm.
When I vote my values. I vote my principles. And I think the reason that this makes me so crazy is that this is in direct conflict with pretty much everything that I have believed about America in so many different ways, which, I don't view this as an immigration story. I view this as a values story, a gut check time for where we're at in America. We have politicians using childhood trauma as a bargaining chip. We are essentially using terrorism as a deterrent. The real goal of the Trump administration is to get the word to spread back to other countries through our media and through their circles that if you come to America, you may permanently lose your children. And they want the media to show the pictures of crying children. That has been the intent of the policy, according to Stephen Miller. The American government is terrorizing children for political purposes. It is the antithesis of the non-aggression principle as a libertarian. The non-aggression principle is the ultimate defining axiom for libertarians. We do not advocate using force as to achieve social and political goals. You don't have to agree with this policy. If you say this is wrong, it doesn't mean you're for open borders. Okay? And there are some people who, when you say this is wrong, they go, you're just for open borders. No. You don't agree with this? You're for, like, I'm against terrorism. I'm against it when ISIS kidnaps children,
mm-hmm,
and holds them hostage,
right,
for political purposes. I'm against it when the United States government does it. And I have a really hard time understanding how people don't see the same thing I see.
Yep.
That to me is even harder than watching the images. That there are so many people in this country that are not just okay with this, but actively defending it and proud of it because of the others mm-hmm. being punished. Those aren't human children to them.
Right.
What is that, Harry?
I don't know. It's disgusting because like but it's all based on this idea that, well, we have to know who is coming in and is going out. Properly vet these people. Got to properly vet them. What the heck does that even mean?
Okay, well, if that's what you believe, then how is that being accomplished here? Because we've already heard that this is a complete mess.
Right.
They're losing children. They've lost tens of thousands of children in the last few years.
Correct, yeah. And if properly vetting is your key, then why are you breaking up these families and separating them this way?
Right.
Now it's an improper way to vet them because now you know separating them to these groups like this. The other thing with it is like if you just want to know who comes in and who comes out, we can do that with a 4K camera and a sign-in sheet if it's all you want to know who's coming in, who's coming out. Right? I've got a sheet of paper.
Well, see, you're arguing things that Republicans and conservatives said in 2012. They don't realize that they have gone from we need to keep track of people in this country mm-hmm. to now we don't care what happens, even if it's terrorizing children, get the fuck out of our country. You're not people.
Right.
You don't realize that that's how you sound and that's how far you've drifted, dear listener, mm-hmm. A Facebook viewer. But that's where you're at. So how did we get here?
And the other thing is, one thing is you don't see these people for some reason, don't think they'll ever be in that type of situation themselves.
Right.
That's the other thing. It's like, how would you feel if you did that? Well, it's like, no. It'd be very, very quick for any country to have a downfall or something like that, and you need to go somewhere. Where are you going to go? Let's say, Libertopia, New Hampshire becomes this great bastion of freedom, and that's the only thing that's left. Where the heck do you think you're going to go?
Right.
How wouldn't you get to that board? How you want to be treated?
Yeah. And that's really what it comes down to, the golden rule. I mean, as a Christian, my politics are informed by my religion, and I sure as heck wouldn't want to be treated like this. I wouldn't, and I don't want others to treat children this way in my name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the basic golden rule, but how did we get here? It is generations of people voting in a way. You have to understand that I think sometimes when we talk about public policy, we have disconnected the right now from the eventual consequences or from any consequences at all. Someone said they'd rather die than live by Roger Paxton. Hilarious. Yes, individuals choose their behavior, but government set up environments with perverse incentives. And one of those perverse incentives that the government has created over the last 50 years is through the drug war. So the U.S. government really declares war on drugs in the 70s. Why? Nixon. You think Trump is bad? I just listened to the Slow Burn podcast by Slate. It's a great podcast. If you're into politics, you'll love that podcast. And you realize that Donald Trump is a choir boy compared to Richard Nixon. Nixon was hands down, of all the presidents I've studied, after listening to that, I'm like, holy crap. If you compare Watergate to the Russia investigation, Trump has been very staid and has let the process continue and he found a hope you find a way in your heart. Nixon was, you just got to go listen to it. and so Nixon basically wants to, according to his chief of staff, who later said this in the 80s to Rolling Stone, they needed to criminalize their political opponents in blacks and drug takers, pot smoking hippies. Mm-hmm. And so they begin the war on drugs to weaken their political enemies.
Yep.
I apologize. I've had laryngitis, so my voice gets kind of dry sometimes. So as they ramp up the war on drugs, the policy causes gangs to profit off of a black market like alcohol prohibition in the 30s. Why did bootleggers and Al Capone pop up in the 30s? Because you prohibited a substance and then a black market grew around it. Yep. And then military interventions by the U.S. in the 1980s destabilized Central and South American countries further. We pump these countries full of weapons and money And then we incentivize those countries to start fighting drug cartels. The drug cartels, who already are flush with cash, buy weapons. Mm-hmm. And then these countries devolve into civil war. I think I read somewhere that we gave like $2 billion to Guatemala or El Salvador.
Like $2 billion in today's money? That sounds kind of high for the 80s.
I'm talking about in 2016.
Okay.
That we did that.
Well, what?
Yeah, ooh. I think we'll get it to in this article here.
Maybe I stay too much of the 80s stuff. Sorry. Oof.
So we're going to give you a ton of weapons, but don't kill each other.
Don't kill each other.
The native populations reject colonialism and they reject foreign intervention, just like we would reject foreign intervention, and they start electing these populist dictators that are going to promise to solve all of their problems. But what they don't realize is these populist dictators are funded and set up by the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
And so then eventually the governments merge with the cartels, and you just have this massive amount of cash and weapons. And so over the course of the 90s and the 2000s, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, you have a de-evolution of the situation in these countries.
Yeah, it just shows you the reach and the power of the United States government. The United States domestic policy, what they do inside its own country, is affecting other countries.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's just like, yes, there is this such thing as American exceptionalism. Yes, it's powerful. It's so widespread, it affects the world.
We are an exceptional country because of the values that we are founded on, which are free markets.
Mm-hmm.
Free markets, respect for individuals, the rule of law, no caste system,
yep,
that everyone is equal in this country, not because we have the biggest military and not because we have the most money,
right,
and not because we have white culture like Donald Trump really kind of those are the reasons I think he thinks we're exceptional, but those are not why we're exceptional. We're exceptional mainly because, yes, our money, but because we have free markets, we give everybody a chance in this country to succeed.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. There's a lot of very, very smart Scottish people, and we've taken their ideals and have ran with it.
Yep.
Okay? And that has influenced countries that don't take those types of ideals to heart and then have these control economies, so they just see something that's like, hey, if we do this, we make money from those people.
Right.
Let's just do this one thing. And they control everything to do this one thing.
Yeah.
To get money for themselves and not build up anything else, because they have no incentive to build anything else up because they already control everything. Because they have a caste system.
So at the same time that the war on drugs is happening in those countries, we also are locking up more and more people for possession, drug pushing here in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the prison system explodes. And gangs basically run the United States prison system at this point. And in the 80s, Latin gangs started popping up as more and more Hispanics started going to jail for selling drugs, for trafficking drugs. And those prisons were run by black gangs and white supremacist gangs. And so naturally gangs sprouted up. The MS-13 gang was a Salvadoran gang, for instance, that began in L.A. as a response to... Mm-hmm. protect the members of that black market who are selling drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they get locked up, they serve their time, and then after they've served their time, they get deported back to their countries. Mm-hmm. So we end up shipping gang members back, and then the cartels grow stronger by sending all these violent elements back. Now you fast forward to now, 99%, 96% or some crazy high number of what is actually busted at the border, what drugs are actually caught at the border, 99% of it's pot. So as states have begun to legalize weed, then the drug cartels are starting to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they've done is they've started to diversify their portfolio. Not only are they taking over state-run operations like oil fields, they're also getting into human trafficking. And that's why human slavery is on the rise. It is because of gangs in Africa, in some parts of Asia, and in some parts of South and Central America.
Yep.
And So for decades, immigrants to America generally were young men who were coming here to work in fields. They were here for seasons, and then they'd go back for seasons. You know, they were seasonal workers, and they were basically snowbirds.
Yeah, and that still happens, by the way.
Right, absolutely. And then they would send the money back to their home country, called remittances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Donald Trump proposed he was going to build the wall, was these remittances. And but now we're seeing a trend where there are more and more women and children coming to the border because they're fleeing the sex slave trade in their home countries. For instance, preteen girls make up a big part of the new population because they migrate to avoid grooming gangs. So it's always hilarious to watch the same people who talk about Tommy Robinson and grooming gangs in Europe, how they don't want to let in preteen girls and grant them asylum as they're fleeing the same grooming gangs in South America because we don't want to let them in. That's just a very stark, clear example of how your thinking is not clear and you're not consistent in your values. If you're against grooming gangs and sex slavery in Europe, then you should be against it in Central America, and you should want to do something to help.
Mm-hmm.
If preteen women were fleeing Norway because of grooming gangs, Islamic grooming gangs, you would let them in a heartbeat. But why wouldn't you let the Salvadoran girl in? Why do you think that is, Harry?
Well, the Norwegian girls would be closer to 6 foot tall, so all our D1 volleyball teams would go up, you know, make sure we stay, you know, like Olympic viable.
Right.
The shorter El Salvadoran girls, they won't have that. But their arms are longer and harder, so our softball teams would be even better. That's some level teacher. Just trying to bring some funny, fun, laugh to this whole depressing topic. But the biggest reason is because, like, well, you know, possibly they're white. Possibly they're, you know, they'll fit more into, quote unquote, they look the correct amount. They can blend in easier, at least into most people's societies can.
So when you're seeking asylum, usually you stop at the first country you can go to, and for many of these countries, it's Mexico. And Mexico is no safer than their countries, although El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala are now the most dangerous countries on Earth.
Yes.
Mexico is still not much of a better choice. They're now seeing a record killing of politicians in Mexico.
Right. And they only, to be perfectly honest, they only like you if you're Mexican there.
Right.
They
Hispanics are very racist against each other. It's not even a joke. They're very big. They're very biased.
They have a caste system too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they have different opinions on basic on people on how much Spanish blood is in you versus how European and Spanish you are.
Well, here's the crazy thing is that, it's a Catholic society. Like, these people who don't want Western society to be eroded by all these foreigners coming in, it's like you don't want the pro-life religious Catholics who don't want gay marriage, who are entrepreneurial coming in, who are of European descent and Catholic religion. These are Western people.
Yeah.
They're just browner than you.
Yeah, they're just browner. They're basically European. Yeah, you're right. They're European hardcore Catholics. They're the hardcore Catholics.
Right.
And how dare No. If they're coming to America, they're playing softball, not soccer.
Yes, sorry. That's right. Most choose America for obvious reasons, because of security and economic opportunity. And let's face it, America can take it. Like, America is not a fragile society. For all the hysteria of the left, for instance, America is not a fragile society. We have the ability to absorb large amounts of people. We accept already 1.1 million immigrants every single year. And have you noticed that big of a difference? No. It's because we are a very durable society with a lot of economic opportunity. And as unemployment drops, we need more and more employees. For instance, trucking industries are begging for people right now.
Yes.
And when Alabama, for instance, tried to ban all illegal immigrants, they had just watermelon patches dying because there was no one there to pick it.
Oh, yeah.
And so they tried to hire white and black workers that were American, and they quit within an hour.
Yeah, there was a great story. No. They weren't trying to hire them. They literally went to and got parolees. It was either jail or pick these watermelons.
Right.
They chose jail.
Right. I mean, I would too. Yeah. And, Alabama's hot right
when
now.
I was working in that when I was working at the warehouse, right? We just started like I remember when that law went through, we just started getting applicant. We went to 100% employees because all these people from Alabama just showed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like and they had the work visas, you know.
Right.
Hey, we filed out the paperwork correctly. They could work, and we, boom, warehouse was 100%. We were rocking and rolling.
So you have all these people. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to respond back to Kristen Rodriguez in the comment. She said, and don't call us Mexicans if we're. When I hang out with my cousin and my half-sister, or, you know, half, you know, Puerto Rican, the only time, the only place they ever are actually identified as Puerto Rican is when we're in Boston. Everywhere else, it's either Mexican, Honduran, Guatemalan, or Cuban when we're in Florida.
Right. So, and leaving their home, especially in Africa, but also in Latin American countries, leaving their home makes them social pariahs in their hometown, mm-hmm. and it marks them or their family members for further violence. I think yep. if you listen to The Daily, the New York Times podcast this week, and they talked about Barack Obama opened up asylum for domestic violence victims, and this woman from Africa was telling her story about her abusive husband and getting asylum, and now she's here, she's fallen in love, she can sleep at night. She was basically given to a man because he paid the dowry. Mm-hmm. He bought her like property. And then when he was abusive, she fled to her parents' house. The guy drove his truck into the house. And then when she left, the family had to provide another woman because he had paid the dowry. So she's like, I hated to leave because I knew one of my cousins or sisters was going to have to suffer the same abuse, but I was going to get killed, so I had to leave. And so those are the kind of stories why Barack Obama opened it up, because in many of these third world countries, the patriarchy rules. Like those kind of stories, like you hear about India, for instance, mm-hmm. and the pink gang in India as they protect women of sexual violence. Police and governments shrug in third world countries towards violence towards women. You know, so all the talk about the oppressive Western society and toxic masculinity, it's like, you realize for the first time in human history, Western civilizations are the one who ended the dowry, who gave suffrage, who like opened up the workforce to women. Like, we're the ones pulling the rest of the world towards liberty and freedom. And that's why people just get so annoyed. Yes, everybody wants women to have equality.
Yeah.
No, we don't want to be subservient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I speaking your language, Harry?
No, yeah. Yeah, the reason why most people get annoyed is like, yes, we see you pointed out here in Western society. Okay, you really can't. Please go after them. That's right. Who needs it. That's who needs it to be educated.
The gang in India needs help.
Yeah, they need funding.
Right.
Go help them out.
So
why aren't they armed? Why can't we give them a billion of guns?
So I look at this and I go, why are we turning our backs on asylum seekers? These preteen girls who are fleeing grooming gangs in Central America, who are fleeing MS-13, are not MS-13. I saw someone comment, well, how do we know they're not compromised? Sure, I'm sure there are some instances of the administration being right, and some of the cases that the Sessions people put out there saying, you know, this one guy brought in these sex slaves. And that probably happens in a very fractional percentage of these cases, but you can't let that fractional percentage on the fringes of the actual numbers drag you to a point where you let the vast amount of decent people who are fleeing dangerous situations completely distract you from the reality of the situation. That's why I have such a problem with Donald Trump on this issue, is that he is completely detached from any statistics, any reality on the ground, any understanding of the historical nature of why these people are suffering or why they're leaving. He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And when these people walk up to seek asylum, this is what's happening now. So when Jeff Sessions says, you need to come to this country legally, when your Facebook friend says, you need to come to this country legally, here's what happens when people try. Prepare to be pissed, Harry. So again, from Texas Monthly, June 3rd, 2018, border agents are using a new weapon against asylum seekers. As the temperature reached 105 degrees, three Guatemalans made their way north Saturday on the Paso del Norte Bridge linking El Paso and Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, seeking to claim asylum in the United States. On previous attempts, over the past day, they had been met at the Long Bridge's apex by custom and border protection agents, a highly unusual tactic who asked they normally are not met, who asked them for identification and told them they couldn't proceed to the port of entry because the holding cells were at capacity. This time, the three migrants, a badly sunburned woman, her baby, and a 16-year-old girl, who was not related to them, were accompanied by two representatives of Annunciation House, an El Paso organization that has helped migrants and refugees for more than four decades. Once again, they were stopped by two border agents, asked for documents, and then told they were not allowed to go further into the United States because of capacity issues. So began a tense standoff Saturday that marks an escalation in U.S. tactics to keep immigrants out of the country, including those legally entitled to enter and seek asylum, and relieve crowded immigration facilities that officials say are filled beyond capacity. Ruben Garciera said, who founded the Annunciation House, "I know you're not at capacity. I know that's what you've been instructed to say." He knows many of the border agents and has a good handle on this. A recent law school graduate who is working with the Annunciation House told the agents they were legally required to let the Guatemalans make their asylum claim because they were already several steps inside the country, a boundary that exists at the bridge's apex. The two border agents, whose name tags identified them as it's not relevant, politely but firmly held their ground. I did that because I couldn't pronounce the name. Garcia asked to speak to a supervisor, and they made the call. Before the supervisor arrived, another agent came up to the group. His name tag was obscured. The agent said they had been assigned to check IDs as people crossed the boundary line, a highly unusual effort coming at a time when President Trump is expressing increased frustration that his administration cannot control the national border, a key campaign promise of his. IDs are usually required a couple hundred yards further north, as well into U.S. soil, at the port of entry, where people make citizenship and custom declarations and apply for asylum. And while the agents at the top of the bridge said they were checking the ID of all people walking across the bridge, Levy noted that the agents weren't checking many IDs other than those of people with the dark skin and threadbare clothing that is typical of many Central American migrants. By making asylum claims at a port of entry, immigrants are supposed to be given a court date, so that judge may determine if the asylum claim is credible. But recent reports suggest Central Americans are being turned back to Juarez. Ironically, Garcia said, many of these Central Americans have grown frustrated and subsequently decided to sneak into the U.S. outside of a port of entry, then gotten arrested by the Border Patrol. Then they talk about separating children. So this is what the government says is happening. This is a statement from the CPB. Regarding what you witnessed today, we are taking a proactive approach to ensuring that arriving travelers have valid entry documents in order to expedite the processing of lawful travel. That being said, CPB processes undocumented persons as expeditiously as possible without negating the agency's overall mission or compromising the safety of individuals within our custody. The number of inadmissible individuals CPB is able to process varies based on upon case complexity, available resources, medical needs, translation requirements, holding detention space, overall port volume, and ongoing enforcement actions. No one is being denied the opportunity to make a claim of credible fear or seek asylum once space is available and other factors allow the officers to allow more people into the facility. They're allowed in. Federal law prohibits agents from turning away people who say they want to seek asylum, which is means of legal entry into the United States. The Immigration and Nationality Act from 1952 that we talked about earlier states any alien who is physically present in the United States or who arrives in the United States, irrespective of such alien status, may apply for asylum. That's the law. That's really clear. Okay, so for those of you who love the law, who are talking about how all these people need to go back where they came from and follow the law, that's the law. any alien who is physically present in the United States or who arrives in the United States, irrespective of such alien status, may apply for asylum. The group of Guatemalans gathered on the Mexican side of Paso del Norte Bridge were the latest to be caught up in the administration's efforts to reduce illegal immigration and clamp down on what it sees as exploitation of the asylum process. The group included several men traveling with their sons, a couple of teenage boys traveling without parents or guardians, a couple of teenage boys, okay, the woman and her baby, and the 16-year-old girl traveling by herself. Garcia and Levy introduced themselves and asked the migrants about their stories. They came from different villages and told similar tales of fleeing intense poverty, a corrupt government, and violent street gangs who were trying to dragoon young boys. The men and their sons wept openly as they spoke. The young mother told Garcia and Levy that she had been raped in Guatemala. The only young girl in the group was more... Only the young girl in the group was more reticent to discuss what caused her to flee home. The pieces that she put out there was that she would go back to school and then she would lock herself in her room when she would come back. And I tried to get from her, why do you feel the need to do that? And I couldn't get an answer.
Wow.
You know anything about trauma, Harry? Because when a 16-year-old girl is unable to speak what happened to her, that means some pretty heavy shit happened.
Yeah, that's
in psychology.
Yeah, she just shuts down. Just shut down. That's wow.
So, so essentially, then these border guards go on. They keep trying to get asylum. They keep walking up to the bridge, and a supervisor finally comes out, and his name is Gomez. And he says, we are not absolutely saying that they cannot make an asylum claim. We are just saying that we cannot process them at this time. When Garcia said the law required CPD or the Border Patrol to process their asylum claims, Gomez said, sir, I'm sure you know I'm following directions. And this is not even local directions. Gomez said, sir, I'm sure you know I'm following directions. And this is not even local directions. Where's your brain go to that? Where does your brain go, Harry?
It's like... yeah, it's just that, like, dude, are you...
Garcia wasn't buying it. I know by the numbers of migrants that ICE is turning over to us, there is room, because the numbers are low and they have been low this whole week, he told Gomez. So this house, basically, the Annunciation house, when they cross the border for asylum claims, normally they go to the Annunciation house, or if they can't get access, then they go there. This is basically a safe haven where they can get food and shelter and clothing and access to the border. Garcia and Gomez had been talking for about 4 minutes when Garcia asked, so right now, as far as they are concerned, I understand you to say you will not allow them to present for asylum. Then Gomez changed course. They are, as Levy pointed out, stepping on U.S. soil, so we are going to take them in to process their claims. They escorted them to the port of entry. By this time, some of the other Guatemalans had made their way up to the bridge. 4 were standing inside U.S. territory. 3, including the father who had been separated from his sons earlier in the day, were on the Mexican side of the line. 2 border agents, who had been standing a few feet from the border, stepped forward and stood directly on the line. I witnessed one of the agents take a step into Mexico to prevent one of the Guatemalans from crossing into the United States.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
Well, if you want to follow the law, yeah, you physically can't. No, it's because it's a stupid imaginary line, but yeah. If playing by his game, he can't do
you
that.
You can't do that. That's illegal.
He broke the rules of the game that he's playing.
The law is that if they present themselves at a port of entry, you legally have to process their asylum claim.
Yeah. Or just inside the United States, period. So once you've crossed the imaginary line.
So basically, Garcia says, all right, we're good here. I'm going to go get everybody some food. Goes back to the house to get some sandwiches. He comes back an hour later, and everyone is gone. What happened to them? He said they went back. What happened to the one who were standing on the boundary line? Well, they went back as well. Seems odd, doesn't it?
Just
decided they made it all that way, and they just said, yeah, I'm going to go back to Juarez, Mexico. I'm not going to, yeah.
Go back.
So.
Stinks here.
So let's go back to the, let's go back to the detention center. Let's go back to a pediatrician's view into the Border Patrol processing center. So if they are able to follow the law and enter legally, then they go to, what used to happen is they would get a number, they get an ID, they'd get a court number, and then they would be released. Catch and release, as Stephen Miller has so propagandistically called it. And then they would eventually be able to present at a civil court hearing to then outline their reason for asylum. If they were granted asylum, then they would be granted access to the United States. If not, they would be deported back to their home countries. Families were intact until 4 months ago. Now what is happening is even if these people get asylum, they are all being put into detention centers. Hmm. Even the ones who came here legally and presented themselves at a point of entry. The multiple points of entry across the southern border over the last 4 months have essentially, effectively been closed. Without congressional approval, Donald Trump has closed the southern border. Now, you may think that's a great thing, but here's why it's not. Because the law of the United States, passed by the Congress of the United States, mm-hmm. representing the will of the people of the United States, says that's not how the law works. And you don't, as president, get to just decide what law you want to follow and don't follow. You don't get to just wave a magic wand and close the southern border and completely change international and federal law because you feel like it, because you need to do well in the midterms. Plain and simple, he's violating the will of the people.
Two things. One, the moose should have told you America's closed.
Yeah, the moose out front should have told you back at the beginning of Mexico.
Yeah, and I am the Senate.
That's exactly right. So there's people right now on the Facebook cheering this. You're in violation of the United States law. You're actively cheering the violation of the United States law. You're overriding the will of the people of the United States. You are traitorous. 1776, I'd shoot you right in the face. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't shoot you. You're not traitorous, but you really do need to rethink your position because...
bullets expensive.
Right. Yeah.
1776.
Yeah, 1776, closed borders... for the win.
No, yeah, you can even watch like old Western movies. They'd cross to Mexico all the time and cross right back.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care.
I have a friend on Snapchat. Well, she's up in Montana and she walked right over into Canada and walked right back.
Yeah, well, like in Vermont, there's a library that goes right through the border. It goes right down to, right through the street. You have neighbors that are technically would be in Canada. It's just right down the middle of the street and you can't supposed to. And in order to cross the street, you've got to walk down the street to the port of entry to get into Canada to go see your neighbor, which is right across the street from you. So most people just take the misdemeanor and just walk across the street.
This commenter makes a good point. It's the Canadians we need to worry about. As I have repeatedly said for years on this show, 97% of them live on the American border.
Mm-hmm.
They send their spies in, those little geese that mm-hmm. fly around, the drones.
Mm-hmm. The drones.
They send in, they try to trick us into liking them with people like Michael J. Fox and uh-huh. Alan Thicke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I'm not buying it.
Well, yeah,
we need to watch them.
Well, like, that's the goofy thing about that is the whole like closed border port of entry. Like, there's so many people that drive between different borders between Canada and the United States all the freaking time just to do things in on this side of the border or the other side of the border.
Okay, so if we do admit them, they go to the detention center, and we talked a little bit about what was going on in the detention center, but here's a little more detail. So can you talk about, this is from the Pediatrician's View into Border Patrol Processing Center from Texas Monthly. Can you talk about food, punishment, contact with parents, sleeping arrangements, that kind of thing? Yeah, well, let me say in the processing center itself, they give them thin mats to sleep on the concrete floor, and they give them a Mylar blanket to cover up. And they sleep in the chain link enclosures that many call cages in their groups, and they give them meals. They're not warm meals, but they give them 3 meals a day. They can take a shower. They have a change of clothes, and their clothes are washed and given back to them if they want them. But they're not allowed to stay with siblings if they're of the opposite gender. Right. Not while they're being processed within that facility. Children are not supposed to be in that facility longer for 72 hours. And then they're supposed to be moved to be released with their parent, if that's what they decide to do, or taken to the ORR shelter, which will care for that child until they can make arrangements to find out who they should be placed with. That ORR shelter, all your Facebook friends are posting of the pool tables and all that stuff, that's the ORR shelter. Those do have they're basically built for this. They're not detention facilities. Mm-hmm. So when they do go to these detention facilities that everybody, you know, the chain link fence that your liberal Facebook friends are posting about, well, your Republican friends are posting the ORR shelters. So,
right.
But the argument that they're getting, you know, pool tables and video games and field trips, these kids are still openly weeping and crying and like, you don't give a shit about a pool table when you don't know where you're at, who you're with, where your parents are, and when you're going to see them again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, you're an idiot if you say that sort of thing. You're not making any sense. You're just thinking with your bias.
Yep.
So she talks about the mental state a little bit now. Basically, my concern is the trauma that is being caused in that processing center when they are separated and when they're separated from their families. And so I can describe in December of last year, I took several pediatricians in with me to view the processing center again. And when we were outside, they were talking to us about the facility, what we would see, where we were going, where we couldn't go, that we could just go in for a certain distance, and which would they basically brought them in. And when we were brought in, you could hear the voices of children, but you couldn't tell what they were doing. Then they opened the door, and we went in, and we saw that there were these enclosures, and the one right by us within 6 feet was an enclosure that was locked around with 20 or 30 10-year-old boys who were crying and screaming and sobbing for their mothers. And some of them were reaching through the chain-link fences as if they were trying to reach out to their mothers and screaming. One little boy had his back to the wall and was slumped in to control his sobs. It appeared that their mothers, since the boys were screaming for them, were in incidental cages about 50 feet away, unable to get to their sons or help them. In between them, there were desks where Border Patrol agents were sitting working at their desks at their computers. We suggested that they should get a child specialist to help these kids get some comfort and talk them through and help them process this. A specialist could talk to the children and help get them through that very scary thing of being separated from a parent and not being able to get to them. And we were told that we didn't understand, that they were law enforcement. That's not what they did. They're not a child care facility. They don't do that, and they don't have time to do that. So what effect does that have on a child? It can have a really long-lasting effect on them, especially this level of stress and trauma. And when you as a parent can't see them or can't be right next to them and you can't comfort them and explain things to them and they can see that you're unable to protect them, that affects the attachment of a parent with a child because a child thinks that they can trust their parent, that they can be protected. And if they can't, then that takes a while to reestablish that attachment again because they don't know who is safe. And when they're afraid for that long, even though 72 hours doesn't seem like that long, for a child that's an eternity, and it will kick off the extreme toxic stress reaction into a child's body. And it's much worse in a child than in an adult, because a child's brain is still developing. And so you have that high level of stress hormones flooding the brain, it will change the brain structure. It will make the child more vulnerable for long-standing hypertension to cardiac disease, just because of the cascade of stress hormones and its reaction in the body for fight or flight. It can cause certain cancers, it can cause obesity, long-term problems for children. And that's why you see so many pediatricians across the country speaking up. It's because we know when we see these things, when we see the way they are being treated, we know what the effect's going to be eventually, and we have to help them now. What ages did you see? All ages. Babies. Newborn. How are they being cared for? They're all in cages. A mother would stay with her infant if she was breastfeeding the infant. They would be together in those enclosures. And that's it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I think people make the cute, convenient excuse because they don't want to hear that. They don't want to accept the fact that they are paying the taxes. that sets up that structure that is causing that terror in that child. So then they say, well, it's the parent that's responsible for bringing them here. For the people fleeing these countries, this isn't even a deterrent.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Because this is not even close to the constant terror, the risk of the travel. Staying is certain death in these situations.
Yeah.
And if you read the stories of the immigrants that actually come here, staying is certain death. So the risk, it's kind of like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Right.
And so I think people try to rationalize this kind of trauma towards children by saying it's the parents' fault because they don't want to accept any responsibility that their tax dollars, that their politicians, that their government is doing this.
Pretty much. And it is the... Because in the countries that they're coming from, every situation you do, everything like that, that's nothing. Yes, you may try to wrap yourself in the blanket of, well, that means they're better off. That chain link's better than the, you know, like the shanty house that you're probably living in. You're probably right. But the mental trauma that you're just separating families, that's the issue. Yes, they're incapable of dealing with it. They're incapable of dealing with it because they made a very rushed decision and bypassed U.S. law.
They'd rather take this risk. So I want to talk about the morality of this because
the other thing that always just shocked me is that the border agents that are sitting at their desk, watching, listening, all this happening.
Yeah, that's really one thing that stuck out to me is that there's a desk. These guys are basically like sitting in between these terrorized children and mothers crying and children crying, like that's just ignoring it and drowning it out. And there's actually an article from Vox that kind of addresses this from a psychologist. His name's Bernardo Zacca, a research fellow at the Center for Ethics at Stanford. And he talks a little bit about judging the decisions of bureaucrats. And I think this is an important piece of this because we're seeing a lot of third world authoritarian strains within this story. And I'm not saying Donald Trump is literally Hitler because that's stupid. I'm saying that there are certain patterns in authoritarian regimes and structures that end up creeping in, and if they're not checked, then they continue to grow as a cancer.
Right.
And bureaucrats carrying out emotionally traumatic things to them and just getting over it is one of those things.
Yes.
There's a book called Into the Darkness about the guy who ended up running one of the concentration camps, Treblinka, I think it was. And he basically talks about his journey. He sits down and tells every piece of a story in this book. And he talks about his journey from a police officer in, I think, Austria to being the head of Treblinka. And how did he get there? How did he end up there? Because he was just a regular police officer. You know, Sheriff Joe down the street who ends up head of the concentration camp. And he felt such immense guilt for it that he wanted to do this book to atone and to teach other, like, here's how it happened. There's a book called Ordinary Men that Jordan Peterson talks a lot about, where it's these ordinary police officers and security guards who get recruited to go out and just mass execute people. And in this book, Into the Darkness, he's just a bureaucrat, government employee, and he feels kind of hopeless about his situation. He obviously doesn't want to be a Nazi, but he feels that in the beginning that his life, he has no choice. It's either do this or be killed. And he doesn't have the strength to say no. And he does it anyways. And Jordan Peterson talks a lot about this. Every single one of us listening, Harry, me, within us is the ability to carry out atrocities. And so for those of you who are mocking this issue, Here is a direct example of what Jordan Peterson is talking about.
Right.
So you're not consistent again.
Yeah.
You're
Thank you.
What is the where's your line for consistency?
Yep.
So because here are two guys, here are people who are, you know, and Masha Gessen, before we kind of break down the psychology of it, Masha Gessen is a writer at The New Yorker, great writer. I wish I could write like her. And she wrote an article called "By Separating Families at the Border, the Trump Administration Enforces the Rule by Nobody." In depersonalizing the separation of asylum seekers and their children at the southern border, the Trump administration officials are signaling that no one will account for the violence. This is how violence works in the world's most cruel and terrifying societies. Actually, let me start from the beginning. Donald Trump said the Democrats made him do it. Jeff Sessions said it was the Bible. Kristen Nielsen said it was the law. They all said it wasn't them. In their unified defense of the policy of separating children from their families at the border, administration officials have adopted a technique of deflection that renders victims and critics powerless. They have depersonalized the violence. This is how violence works in the world's most cruelest and terrifying societies. The victims of genocide, ethnic cleansing and mass deportations, mass incarceration, man-made famines, and the disasters that humans intentionally visit on the quote-unquote other are always anonymous. The perpetrators portray their victims as a mass, the quote-unquote animals of Trump's imagination. Although I do quibble with that, he was talking about MS-13 and their animals. Mm-hmm. Okay, Donald Trump was not talking about all immigrants, he was talking about MS-13. Or the enemies and criminals that Sessions and Nielsen conjure up when they talk about asylum seekers. For instance, you see the strain in our comment thread on this Facebook post where basically everyone's, though, they're lawbreakers, they're criminals. These are, how do we know the MS-13 isn't tricking us? You know, it's those strains that justify the examples on the extreme end of the behaviors that justify the treatment. I'm sure there were some Jewish bankers who really did rip people off.
Yes.
And those small percentages of examples end up leading to all the Jews being put in a ghetto over a few years.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is with the how you know this is not MS-13 tricking us. MS-13 is armed to the teeth. And ambushing someone out in the middle of the desert, especially a border guard who, I'm sorry, they are armed, but there's like one or two of them in a truck.
Right.
They're armed and they are trained, but there's two. There's only two. The other thing is, like, it's, yeah, you're absolutely right with this whole Jordan Peterson and talking about that, because another thing that gets me with a lot of these people, these same libertarians, like to wrap themselves in the feel-good blankie of the Oath Keepers. The Oath Keepers will keep me safe.
Right.
They will follow their oath, and they will make sure stuff like this don't happen to American citizens.
Yeah.
But if you can do this to someone just because you don't know them because they speak a different language, it's just a hop and a skip to do just because, you know, I don't care if this person's from California. I don't care.
They aren't going to protect you. You have to protect yourself. And you have to speak out when things like this happen because you don't want it to become so prevalent in your society that it becomes the norm.
Correct. I'm not disparaging.
That's why so many people are concerned about the separations and about this treatment. We don't want this to become the norm.
Right.
Yeah. Plain and simple. We're not arguing for open borders. We're saying this isn't the norm, and this is where we're drawing the line.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to disparage Oath Keepers. I'm not trying to just spin on their honor and say like they're the despicable people. I'm just saying that they're human. They're human, just like those humans sitting at the desk.
Right. When Trump blames the cruelty at the border on the Democrats, when Sessions says that God made him enforce the law indiscriminately, or when Nielsen claims, in effect, to just be following orders, the nation's top officials are not merely lying, they're depersonifying the perpetrators. They are not merely refusing to be held accountable, but are saying that no one will account for the violence. Now, I should say, Gessen is a writer that has lived in Russia, has been persecuted in Russia, has been an she wrote another article that's really good called "Taking Children from Their Parents as a Form of State Terror," where she talks about her instance of her daughter being threatened by Putin's government in Russia. And I thought that was very interesting. So the Trump administration didn't invent this tactic. The Russian president, Vladimir Putin, has perfected it over the years. He has denied knowledge of arrests, trials, or even people of whom he was doubtless aware. He has shrugged his shoulders and spread his arms in a gesture of helplessness while claiming that the Russian judiciary is independent from the executive branch, a blatant, intentional lie that communicates that no one will be held accountable for political prosecutions. But of course, Putin didn't invent this deflection technique either. Writing about the relationship between violence and bureaucracy, Hannah Arendt said, "In a fully developed bureaucracy, there is nobody left with whom one could argue, to whom one could present grievances, on whom the pressures of power could be exerted." She called bureaucracy the rule by nobody. Trump, you know, Arendt called them administrative massacres. And that really, we have such a big bureaucracy that we can't let bureaucracy be in charge. And Donald Trump is kind of shrugging his shoulders and saying, "I'm not in charge. The bureaucracy is." You know, Sessions is saying, "Here's the policy," but not articulating what they should do. So Border Patrol agents are making the decisions on the border. That's not the rule of law. That's the rule of man. That is the rule of bureaucracy. That is the rule of nobody. And that is not America. These are not American values.
Mm-hmm.
So why Border Patrol agents obey immoral orders, found in Vox today. It is easy and necessary to judge the decisions of bureaucrats, but the conditions they face are enormously complicated and often make it more difficult for them to act ethically. I asked Zaka about the reasons behind this and what we could do to create bureaucracies that encourage people to do what's right, even when they're asked or pressured to do the opposite. It's easy, and I want to visit this because I think for libertarians especially, we're so anti-government that we, when we say bureaucracy, it almost has become a dehumanizing term. Like, there isn't a person who loves their country working in a bureaucracy or in the swamp. And so that dehumanization is a problem, because when you can't actually have a conversation about them or with them, mm-hmm. then you end up demonizing them, and then you end up executing them. And so you bureaucrats are Americans who are making these decisions. The people who are working for the Border Patrol, the people who are working for the Department of Homeland Security, the people who are doing this are human beings who are probably greatly conflicted with the decisions that they are making. They're not just – so if you are the type of person who is angry about this, then you have to realize that there are people who are doing this who probably are having the same level of emotional stress as the children themselves. And they are morally complicit in what is happening to those children, and they should feel stress about it. They should feel guilty about it. But what happens is that they start to rationalize it. Much as people don't want to hear the story of what is actually happening to these children and taking responsibility for their part in it by supporting it and making excuses to divert the emotional stress of it, that's what these guys do too. so he says, it's helpful to distinguish between two sorts of predicaments. There are cases where the directives you receive are clear but morally troubling, and cases where the directives themselves are vague and ambiguous. The first type of case arises when bureaucracies have lost their moral compass, and as a bureaucrat, you must find the strength necessary to say no, or the resilience to live with yourself having said yes. You might think that this is the kind of situation the Border Patrol agents are facing right now. The second sort of case arises more often in bureaucracies. When the law runs out, bureaucrats must resort to a variety of standards to guide their action. They must at the very least strive to be efficient, fair, responsive, and respectful. Knowing how to weigh these values against one another and dealing with the conflicts that occur between them requires people to exert complex moral judgment in the thick of everyday work. Both types of cases are difficult to negotiate, but challenging in different ways. In the aftermath of World War II, many scholars approached bureaucracy as an industrial phenomenon, a bit like a Fordist production line. If all you do is pull a lever alongside thousands of others who are doing similarly minute tasks, none of you may be quite aware that you're producing a weapon. The repetitiveness of the work and the lack of contact with those who will be on the receiving end of it has a way of numbing our moral sensibilities. But things are different when you're a welfare worker, a police officer, or a border patrol agent, because you are directly intervening in people's lives. You know you are separating children from their parents. You can hear the tears and hear the screams. So the mechanism that explains why you can go home and live a normal life has to be different. That's something I try to flesh out in the book that he wrote. If I were to sum it up, I'd say this. As a frontline worker, it's not that bureaucracy shields you from experiencing morally agonizing situations, but that it exposes you to them so frequently that you must develop psychological coping mechanisms that reduce the strain. And that's how indifference comes about. He wrote, When the State Meets the Street is the name of his book. So, you know, people try to gain their self-respect, and so people need to keep their self-esteem as a matter of survival, and so they come up with all kinds of different ways to deal with what they're actually doing. And I think that disconnected, that first type of bureaucrat who is just a cog in the wheel, that is a lot of people in Congress and Washington, D.C. And then you get the people who are teachers, for instance. I think this is a very common problem in our society is that, you know, you've got these bureaucrats coming up with, you know, you hear it all the time if you talk to like a teacher. Who comes up with this stuff? Who makes these rules? Right. It's certainly nobody who's ever taught. Mm-hmm. It's the person who it and this is the way the American system works. This is why I don't believe in conspiracy theories. The government is so big that there's these individual little cogs who are all doing their little daily tasks, but they don't see the massive death machine that they're building around them. Mm-hmm. And then it's the frontline government workers, the soldier, the CPS person, the border patrol agent, the teacher, the police officer, the people who are on the front line, libertarians, those are our friends. Because those are the people who can tell you these are the things that are wrong. I don't understand why they're wrong, but I can tell you this just doesn't make sense as a person who is doing this. Who is making these rules? You know, and so America is a system of all these little bureaucrats making all these little rules and building a little death machine. I mean, this. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and it pushes and it explains a lot of different times that the trauma that a lot of the cops have, that you see that these, a lot of the, especially the newer, younger cops, that they haven't got the better coping mechanism, and that's why you usually see a lot of the younger cops in like these action shootings or getting in trouble with the law when they're interacting with people, because their coping mechanisms makes them, you know, interact either like out of procedure, or they follow procedures to such a degree that, you know, it just looks, it's awful. It's because it's bureaucracy on parade.
Right.
And you feel, and so it makes you feel bad for, like, I feel bad for that person.
And so what I would like everyone to not be is a useful idiot. Have you ever heard of the term useful idiot?
Yes.
All right. So a useful idiot was coined by Lenin, and it is basically the person standing on the sidelines giving, basically complicit in the action by giving it support and defending the action. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who allow themselves to be snowed by a demagogue. They are the ones who allow themselves to be propagandized. And when I see the border debate on both sides of this issue, I see a lot of useful idiots. Mm-hmm. And it's more prevalent on the right than it is on the left in this particular situation, where you see people saying things that aren't true. Like, the Democrats didn't craft a law that made this happen. That's just not true. Trump is powerless. The president is powerless. He's just, Chuck Schumer hasn't passed a law. He is powerless to get anything done. The president of the United States is not a powerless figure. As Lincoln said in the Lincoln movie, I'm clothed in immense power. The president of the United States crafted this policy. He's literally like putting, it's like Blazing Saddles. He's putting the gun to his head and he's saying, don't make me do it. Oh, please do what he say. Do what he say. Like, look at this. Like, he's the one who 3D printed the gun and put it to his head. Like, mm-hmm. It's crazy to me. So those are the useful idiots, the people who say things that just aren't true. Like, they broke the law. They need to go back. Well, we're talking about asylum seekers. Those people didn't break the law. They're trying to do it legally. They're trying to come through the process legally. Well, they need to go back where they came from. Well, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
There will always be people wanting to come to America because America is the greatest country on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It still is one of the most free, it is by and large the freest country on the planet. I'm mm-hmm. allowed to have a podcast. The government hasn't yep. knocked on my door and told me to stop criticizing the government yet. We're economically free.
Mm-hmm.
We're socially free. We're politically free. We're a great country still.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to come here. And if you believe that Donald Trump is making America great again, then why wouldn't you want people to come here?
Right.
But you also have to realize, like, the numbers of people coming to the border are massively, massively decreased. It was 1 or 2 million a year in the 2000s, early 2000s. And now it's like 400,000. So we don't have a crisis on the border. We don't have a massive migrant wave.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you a useful idiot when you say that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You become a useful idiot, a tool of a demagogue who is manipulating the public when you say things like, well, Paul Manafort's kids don't get to see him. It's the same thing. Doug Matakonis wrote a great article at Outside the Beltway called Trump Supporters Draw False Equivalence Between Immigrant Families and Criminals. To start with, someone who is convicted of, to pick an example, armed robbery isn't sent to prison unless they've been found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt by an appropriate tribunal. That is not the case with people seeking asylum at the border. At best, the most they can be charged with is improper entry into the U.S., which is, generally speaking, a misdemeanor rather than a felony. While it's possible for someone to be jailed for a misdemeanor, it's not common except in the case of serious violent misdemeanors, or if the defendant has a pre-existing criminal record. Second, if a person is convicted or accused of a crime or held in jail or prison, their children are not placed in mass detention facilities like the children at the border. In those cases, they are either placed in the custody of the other parent, if that person can't be located, or an appropriate family member, and if one can be found, and assuming that doing so would not be detrimental to the child for some reason. Third, it is crucial to remember that the vast majority of the parents who have been impacted by the new Trump policy administration are seeking asylum rather than merely being undocumented immigrants who were caught trying to sneak across the border with their children. That's a huge difference. So he talks about, we don't have a welfare. We don't have a system of orphanages in the United States anymore. We as a society decided that orphanages were cruel, and this policy is creating new orphanages. We decided as a society that that isn't beneficial to children. This is taking us back to a time when things are not healthy for children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These children who get separated from their parents, and this is a crucial piece of information that I didn't get to earlier, but many of these kids end up staying in the United States. So you've separated these children, and they end up going to live with other family members 99% of the time. It's a very high number. They end up being placed with a family member, and a very minuscule amount end up in foster care. So most of them do end up being placed with a family member. But now you've got a little kid who is being placed usually with first, second generation immigrant themselves, lower economic status, and they're emotionally traumatized because of the Trump policy over the last 4 months. So you now have a psychopath in the train. Like, who do you think will make up MS-13 in 18 years? Well, let's be honest, 13 years. These kids. Because you've emotionally damaged them with your stupid-ass policy. Like, there's no thinking. The other misnomer is two-thirds of the people who are coming across the border do not make up most of the illegal immigrants in this country. Two-thirds are people who are here on expired visas. Those are people that have been let into the country, and then their visas expired, and nobody followed up with them, and they didn't turn themselves in to leave, obviously. It is not the people coming across the southern border. These people generally pose no threat to us. Are there exceptions to the rule? Are there MS-13 gang members? Yes. Are there probably ISIS? Probably.
Very low.
Are there child traffickers coming across the border? Yes. Is it a large percentage or even a small percentage? No. The facts don't bear that out at all. And so when you repeat things that aren't true, you become a useful idiot. You are allowing propaganda to continue to achieve a political aim that is immoral. And then you become immoral yourself. And so you have to choose what do you believe. So let's see. We're nearing the end, believe it or not. No, but I told you there's a lot here. We've got a lot going on. Let's see. So Harry, we've got little news updates.
Mm-hmm.
We got the future of the policy. Let's talk about the drug war. Let's read this headline, and then we'll move on to, so what should we do about it? Okay. We've talked a little bit about that, but, let's just read this headline. U.S. placed immigrant children with traffickers.
Oops.
So the kids are in the detention facility. They get moved to the next facility. Then they get placed with family members, and those that minority that gets placed with foster care. The Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations opened its inquiry after law enforcement uncovered officials uncovered a human trafficking ring in Marion, Ohio last year. At least six children were lured to the U.S. from Guatemala with the promise of a better life and then were made to work on egg farms. The children, as young as 14, have been in federal custody before being entrusted to the traffickers. Your government at work. So let's talk about some things that we can do. First and foremost, let's talk about ending the drug war. Okay? How's that sound, Harry?
Sounds great.
This is a big one. This is a big hunk. Then we'll talk about the little hunks. So this is a great article called "Want to Reduce Illegal Immigration and the Drug War." Again, all the show prep will be on WeAreLibertarians.com. Anyone who speaks to undocumented immigrants regularly knows that they invariably view dangerous and expensive trips to the U.S. as a last resort, usually because something went horribly wrong at home, not because of dreams of having a child who was a U.S. citizen. In Mexico, for example, a former President Felipe Calderon's frontal assault on the country's cartels, continued by his successor Enrique Nieto, has cost more than 100,000 lives, according to some estimates. This article was written in 2015, by the way. For the last 5 years, Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras have topped the list of the country from which the U.S. receives the most asylum applications. In the last year alone, the number totaled 120,000. When 68,000 unaccompanied minors and a similar number of mothers traveling with children crossed into the U.S. from Central America illegally, they generally didn't disappear into the shadows, as the talking point goes. Most of them turned themselves into border officials and asked for asylum or some other form of humanitarian relief. Those who manage to get access to a lawyer, which isn't easy when you have no money and aren't entitled to a public defender, usually win or are allowed to stay. The violence and intimidation that comes with the ongoing drug war drove the vast majority of these people from their homes. Some of the violence is spurred by warring cartels fighting to control routes to the lucrative U.S. drug market. Other times, it's brutal street gangs that intimidate business owners and residents by forcing them to pay protection fees and scare children into their ranks under the threat of death. Even government forces attacking their own civilians, often with total impunity. The U.S. government has spent more than $2.3 billion fighting the drug war in Mexico over the last 7 years, but rarely criticizes abuses committed by the security forces it finances. Man, does that not sound exactly like the United States government, Harry?
Yeah.
Legalizing the recreational use of marijuana should be a no-brainer for policymakers who are seriously concerned about national security and the integrity of our own criminal justice system. Public health concerns, however, make crafting policies that would eliminate the black market for more other harmful drugs less straightforward. So if you drain them of their money, the cartels in these other countries lose their power.
Moves them onto a different cash crop.
Right. Unfortunately, that ends up moving them to sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking, don't like that.
Child slavery.
Yeah, but the other thing is, but they're also drowned into a lot of the, you know, that's just poor economic standards that they have because of the governments that they have, that the United States government backed up because they wanted cheap coffee back in the 1950s, which then sprawled out to what we have here now, because then a lot of other different countries started to make coffee, like Brazil. A lot of people think Brazil could make good coffee. Now they make great coffee, very inexpensive coffee, and brought down the price of coffee because, anyway, this goes into coffee, an import thing, and another reason why a lot of the, because it's all the different crops that are happening in Central America that and are just, you have to, like I said, like the whole diversifying the portfolio, each of those countries, so many of them just like put their backs onto like one type of crop.
Instead of selling their government's weapons, I think it would be better if our companies spent more time trading with them.
Trading with them, and
return
like,
that money that we're shipping for weapons to American taxpayers, so we can then grow the economy.
Correct.
So we can buy more goods from Central and South America.
Yeah, and but the problem is also you can also feel like United States companies are also gun shy because of different like laws, especially the Trump administration have put in about putting things down there. It's like you're shipping American jobs down. Like no, we're just putting a bottling camp company down here so it's cheaper to sell sodas down here, and they want real sugar sodas. The Americans are fine with high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
But they also gun shy because, let's see, like Venezuela took over a lot of the Kellogg's plant. They took over the Coca-Cola bottling plant. So they're also gun shy with moving down there to be careful. They don't get too close to some of these like ridiculous socialist regimes in the South American countries down there. So
my solution is we need to take a look at how our policies on drugs is impacting these countries. How we should stop sending weapons to these countries. We should stop sending cash to these countries. We should end the black market that funds the gangs in these countries. Mm-hmm. We should decriminalize the drug that initially we should starve the local gangs. MS-13, when you legalize all drugs, crime dramatically drops because there's no black market anymore for them to be funded. So if you really hate MS-13, it isn't about sealing the borders. It is about starving them of the funding that they feed off of.
Mm-hmm. Taking that with the economics they use to build themselves out of.
Yep.
Because without money, they're just 23-year-olds hanging out.
Yep.
When it comes down to it.
Right.
And the only reason they're doing it is because this is the path to make money.
So as to the specific plan itself that Trump enacted 4 months ago, not the Democrats, Donald Trump, the New York Times reported today Trump plans executive order to allow detaining families together indefinitely. Trump said, "We're going to be signing an executive order in a little while. We've got to keep the families together." President Trump is preparing to issue an executive order as soon as Wednesday that ends separation of families at the border. He's basically going to do a fix on that 97 decree. And the problem is, I didn't highlight the actual legal part. While Trump's actions appear to stop short of calls for an end to the zero tolerance policy, it would be a remarkable retreat for a president who has steadfastly refused to apologize in almost any other context. All right, see, New York Times, that might be why people think you're the liberal media. there is a part in here that I'm not seeing. I wish I had highlighted. Oh, the order would keep families together, though it is unclear how Mr. Trump intends to claim the legal authority to violate what have been legal constraints on the proper treatment of children in government custody. So essentially, he can put this executive order in place. It could be legally challenged. It may probably would get overturned. But I cannot imagine a liberal group that would challenge President Trump on this. I could see maybe some conservative groups. That would be interesting if the Jay Sekulows of the world, the private lawyer, he would be the most likely to sue over this. What a crazy world we're living in, man. As for the congressional fixes, there are several. No single proposal has enough to pass. This is from Vox. Congress's chaotic scramble to address Trump's family separation border policy explained. There is... DiFi, let's see, where's the title of this? The Keep Families Together Act. Senator Dianne Feinstein has a proposal which has the support of every single Senate Democrat that would outlaw family separations except in very specific cases when there's reason to believe a child is being trafficked or abused by his or her parents. The bill would only allow a family to be separated if a state court terminated an unauthorized immigrant's parental rights or an official from a state or county child welfare agency decided it was in the best interest of the child to be removed. So the federal government wouldn't be involved. Republicans have already found issue with the proposal, calling it a return to catch and release. When a family seeking asylum is released from custody and told to return for a future court and told to return, I've never seen this word, T-O-R-E-T-O-R-N, for a future court date. Senator Cotton hates it, but Senator Cotton's the worst senator in the entire Senate. And that includes John McCain. So to protect the Protect Kids and Parents Act, Ted Cruz has a proposal that has already earned a lot of support from Republicans. The bill would essentially create an expedited 14-day process for asylum cases and double the number of immigration judges on the border from 375 to 750. It would also authorize new temporary shelters that could accommodate families and mandate that unauthorized immigrant families be kept together as long as there isn't criminal conduct or a threat to the child. Trump, many have called this for a fast asylum process unrealistic and say it could result in more people being deported than granted asylum, and Trump has rejected the idea, mischaracterizing the proposal to increase border judges in a speech to small business owners. He instead reiterated support for the border wall. Ultimately, we have to have a real border, not judges. Thousands and thousands of judges they want to hire. Who are these people? Okay. John Cornyn from Texas has a working group. The thing about Cruz is in a tough Senate fight. Cruz was, you know, very grandstandy and went down to the border in 2014 when this happened. He is taking the opportunity to look like he's got a fix for his reelection efforts. But, hey, seems fine to me. A group of Republican senators led by Cornyn, the number two Senate Republican, are also working to draft legislation. It's not entirely clear what would be in the proposal. Cornyn said he is looking to revive his 2014 Helping Unaccompanied Minors and Alleviating National Emergency Act, the Humane Act, which would require a judge to rule on a migrant child's case within 72 hours. Others in this group, like Cotton, called for an overrule of the Flores settlement. So that way, 20 days after, they wouldn't be kicked out. Because here's the Republican objection with the Flores thing. What Republicans really want is they want to get rid of the Flores decree that says that after 20 days, the kid needs to be moved out of detention and settled with a family member. The reason they want to get rid of that is they want to basically detain indefinitely families, which isn't a great solution. If that's what they're arguing for, that's a no-go for me, because you could have these people being a ward of the state. And like, that's what the crazy thing that most of conservatives are arguing is, they're arguing for the federal government to pay for all these kids to be housed. They're creating wards of the state. They're creating Guantanamo Bay for refugees
on U.S. soil.
On U.S. soil up and down the border, and we have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Billions of dollars of years. I mean, and because the process is so slow. Mm-hmm. That's why the catch and release method is because they have to go feed themselves. They have to go find their own shelter. They have to go start settling, and then they meet with the judge, and then they decide their asylum case.
Right.
And yeah, people absolutely don't show up for that meeting. They just disappear into the system. But under the authority of Trump, with a zero tolerance, that's still happening because these kids are disappearing into the system. I mean, there was one article I didn't get to where kids are just completely disappearing from their parents. Like, parents are returning to their home countries and have no idea what happened to their kid. And not in a small amount of cases. Like, a large percentage of the cases, kids are just disappearing into the United States. Like, five-year-olds.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Hundreds of thousands of kids over the last few years have just dispersed into the United States. We have no idea where they're at. No idea. Their parents have no idea.
No record, no database, nothing.
Right.
Nothing. So they're already here in the United States. They are getting, they're going to get education. They're going to get health care.
Yep.
Whole nine yards, which they could, you know, we could have forced their parents to do that on their own.
And in a lot of cases, it's cheaper when you grant asylum because home countries have to pay for a lot of stuff.
Right.
So
takes it out of the foreign aids.
Right.
And, well, they also will, like, will just work it and do it themselves.
Right.
Because they can't stay on the welfare programs.
Tillis, Tom Tillis from North Carolina, Republican, has one that looks like Cruz's, with more border judges, more detention space, but will also pull language from Feinstein's proposal around protections against children for traffickers. This is an interesting poll. Fox News poll came out on September 2017. 83% support pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants. At the time, Fox polling found 54%. So basically, the Dreamer Law, percentage of voters saying extremely or very important Congress pass each. Dreamer Law, 62%, 58% for health care reform, 52% for tax reform. Former President Obama announced DACA in June 2012, and at that time, Fox polling found 54% supported the change. Now it's 62% as of late last year. For illegal immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children, 86% favor work permits, 79% favor U.S. citizenship. What should happen to illegal immigrants working in the U.S.? Legalize now. 83%. Legalize them. There is rare partisan agreement on all fronts. Democrats, 66%, Republicans, 60%, and Independents, 59%, all agree it is important Congress work on Dreamer legislation. 63% of Trump voters favor granting Dreamers citizenship. Setting up a system to legalize undocumented immigrants working in the U.S. also receives bipartisan support. 95% of Democrats, 69% of Republicans, and 82% of Independents want legalization for Dreamers to happen. So, you're out of arguments. it took me 2.5 hours. But you're just out of arguments. This policy needs to be ended completely.
Yeah, cost too much money.
To the left, you know, for Trump, it is so mystifying that he just snatches victory from the jaws of defeat. Like, the guy just walks off of the North Korea summit. It was amazing. It was beautiful. And it was his most popular initiative ever. And now he has done something that has so massively backfired that he has those numbers are from September 2017. I can't wait to see what the new numbers look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Donald Trump has done is he has, for most Americans, disconnected the immigration argument from racial bias and put it into the realm of empathy for children.
Right.
What Stephen Miller and Donald Trump did, they don't realize it yet. They have massively fucked their own position because now most Americans are not looking at this as an issue of nationalism and patriotism. They are now looking at it as a matter of empathy. We must have more immigrants allowed into this country because you're bad, because you're evil. And so by taking the strong, tough approach, you have backfired and given your opponents, the very people that disagree with you, a boost.
Mm-hmm. Everything they wanted, everything they needed, but and it's only to deal with the pain that no one wanted to deal with. Didn't want to deal with it. No one wanted to talk about it. No one wanted to deal with it. And that the thing is, like, allowing them in is the most right position to have. That's like as far as is right you can get. That lack of control there.
Right.
That's what freedom is. Everyone's like, that's this leftist crap. No, this is freedom. No chaser. Here we go. Let's go. Raw dog. Let's do this.
Raw dog, right.
You know, like, I want to control that. No. That's government there. That's government control there.
One other thing that Trump is doing that has flown under the radar, this is, again, from Masha, I guess, in the New Yorker. In America, naturalized citizens no longer have an assumption of permanence. Last week, this was just written yesterday or today, Last week, it emerged that U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services have formed a task force in order to identify people who lied on their citizenship applications and to denaturalize them. Amid the overwhelming flow of reports of families being separated at the border and children being warehoused, this is a bit of bureaucratic news that largely went unnoticed. Historically, denaturalization has been exceedingly rare occurrences, and for good reason. By the time a person is naturalized, he or she has been living in this country for a number of years and has passed the hurdles of obtaining entry, legal permanent residency, and finally citizenship. The conceit of naturalization is that it makes an immigrant not only equal to a natural-born citizen, but indistinguishable from them. So denaturalization, much like the process of stripping natural-born Americans of citizenship, has been an extraordinary procedure reserved for very serious cases, mostly those war criminals. So they're not even now going after dreamers, the kids who don't speak their native tongue and are basically American millennials. Mm-hmm. Like, I follow a dreamer on Twitter, somebody I'd like to have on the show, and she just tweets about American stuff.
Yeah.
Like, she's not really, like, she's an American kid, mm-hmm. You know, without the proper papers.
Mm-hmm.
It would cost $800 billion to send all the dreamers back. It would be a massive, massive hit to the American economy, because when you allow those kids to come into the United States, those 600,000 dreamers, they produce, they buy, mm-hmm. they purchase, yep. they work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it just doesn't make any sense. And so not only are they doing that, they're now going after people who are citizens but from other countries. And if they lied on their application, they're going to denaturalize them and send them back. That's a terrifying thought. I have friends who are American citizens from other countries who, what in the world, on what planet does he think this is a good idea?
What are they going to do? You're going to do that to regular citizens? Yeah, your dad lied about his job, so
right.
we're revoking your citizenship.
Right.
What? Yeah, we're going to send you back to your country according to this 23andMe test. That's Poland. Bye, Spangle.
Right. I don't get it.
I don't speak the language.
So,
yeah, it's ridiculous. So you lose that workforce. You invested all this money in these kids, teaching them through the school system, well, your inadequate school system, and you're just going to let them go? That doesn't sound like that's – where's the return on investment on that? I thought you were a businessman.
So now is the time in the show, Harry, where we play I Told You So.
Yeah.
And this is a fun game.
Okay.
You've collected some thoughts. Let's do that before we close on this.
You want to see some of the comments I've collected?
Do I?
Some of them are horrendous. This one from Paul. I think most of my personal views are libertarian, but I do believe in controlling our border. It is called national security. I'm retired FF from one of the big five counties that make up Metro Atlanta. And if he thinks bad people don't come here, he should have been with me in the height of the gang wars in the mid-2000s.
I don't dispute that bad people come here, and I'm not arguing for, like, this is the thing that people do in the middle of these debates when they have run out of arguments. They shift the debate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have not argued, other than giving my opinion at the beginning for the bias hunters, I have not argued about immigration. I have argued about this specific policy. And so you can hold the view that separating kids from their families is wrong and that Donald Trump is wrong without fully buying into open borders.
Correct.
Like, your brain should be allowed to be that flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can hold two thoughts in your brain at once. I don't dispute that bad people come over. I don't dispute that. The reality is, and this is a common theme across any of we've said it a couple times tonight. There is this thinking amongst the left and right that because the government, the institution of government exists, and because we have people wearing Border Patrol uniforms, that they are effective. We believe that because CPS exists, that children are being protected.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that because police exist, that the people in Chicago are not being killed. The idea, of a pure libertarian society or even a constitutional republic is not scary to me, because I understand that once you remove the perverse incentives of government, then freedom starts to flourish, and that is better for human beings. Always. Because human beings are an empathetic group, and the systemic overarching government apparatus, in this specific case and in so many others, causes good people to do bad things because of perverse incentives. And so I the idea that ISIS can't just run across our border now is like
laughable.
Is laughable.
Like, the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Like, just because border control exists, it doesn't mean they're actually controlling the border. And you can't close the border. You're seeing the inhumanity of a closed border. You're seeing the chaos of a closed border. And this is what so many people don't get, is that what is the end goal of your ideology? This times two? Mm-hmm. How much money is that going to cost us?
Right.
Like, it's not a reality, and you're believing fantasies that don't exist. I see it the same way as you see an open border as a fantasy. Dear conservative, I see the closed border as an even bigger fantasy, because we just don't have the money to do it. We've got to buy a space force, okay?
Nice said it would be cheaper to build the wall if we just bought all the Central American countries down to the Panama Canal.
Right.
Just bought down there. It'd be cheaper.
Sure.
It would be cheaper.
All right, next.
Let's see here. This is a good one. And once again, you're comparing citizen rights with non-citizens.
What does that mean?
You're trying to say that the U.S. Constitution is only for U.S. citizens, not the others.
Well, the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence are natural rights. So if you believe in natural rights, you believe that the rights that are inherent in the Declaration of Independence specifically, but also the Bill of Rights, the Declaration, those rights extend to all human beings, okay? The Bill of Rights are restraints on the United States government. The Constitution is an express written document as to how the government can interact with its citizens. So in some ways you're right, in some ways you're wrong. If you are a citizen that lives in these borders, then yes, the Constitution applies to you. But as we've seen through the course of tonight, the actions of the United States government have a wide-ranging effect across the world. And many of the things that Americans hold dear that we consider special about our country, about our founding, are natural rights that extend to all human beings. I would say that the right to not be kidnapped, the right to not be terrorized, the right to not have your children traumatized is a pretty good natural right.
All right. I got this great write-up from the Thomas Jefferson Law Review, Alien Citizens and Constitutional Rights.
Okay.
The Constitution does distinguish in some respects between the rights of citizens and non-citizens. The right not to be discriminatory denied the vote and the right to run for federal elective office are expressly restricted to citizens. All other rights, however, are written without such limitation. The 5th and the 14th Amendment due process and equal protection guarantees extends to all persons. The rights attaching to criminal trials, including the right to a public trial, a trial by jury, the assistance of a lawyer, and the right to confront adverse witnesses, all apply to the accused. And both the First Amendment's protections of political and religious freedoms and the Fourth Amendment's protection of privacy and liberty apply to the people. The fact that the framers chose to limit to the citizens only the rights to vote and to run for federal office is one indication they did not intend other constitutional rights to be limited.
Okay.
Just read the Constitution. It doesn't have a start or an end. It just says these are rights of the people.
Right.
Other than, and I didn't think about like the right to vote. Yeah, that's the only time it was expressly written there.
That and president.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only time they expressly written, and why would they put that in there if there was any other limitations? That's
a really good point. Yeah. Next.
All right. I feel horrible what happens to the kids, but why aren't we prosecuting their parents for putting them in this situation? It's not like they don't already know what could possibly happen.
Well, they are. But the I wish I could can you look up the there's an act on asylum from 1961. I don't know what it's called. But the United States, asylum is a long-held tradition that really, you know, the United States has had a huge part in the modern era in promoting asylum for refugees. You know, if you look at genocides in Rwanda, there's really been a shift in the American people, and I don't understand it other than to consider it xenophobia. And I've saved this little bit for now, but... no, that's the
1965 one. You know what that was.
This is like a UN, but it's okay. So, asylum is an important. I would have to ask back. I don't understand how you could not look at that 16-year-old girl who is trying not to be kidnapped into sex slavery and say, "Go back to your home country, so we can make you a sex slave." Like, the United States government, when they don't grant asylum to that girl, send her back to sex slavery. And so if we allow a 16-year-old girl into the United States to avoid sex slavery, what are we losing out on? Like, there's... I would just invite you to Google... the 14 most common arguments against immigration and why they're wrong from the Cato Institute. It's in the show notes too. You know, and kind of look through that and see if that challenges any of your assumptions, because I think a lot of the economic arguments just, they don't hold water when you apply them. Most immigrants don't cost America anything for many different reasons. There's like a zero economic impact on immigrants. As we said, you know, like things like school are paid by the home country. The economic impact just isn't there. In fact, they help the economy.
Yes, a lot.
Like when you talk about the Dreamers leaving the country and it costs nearly $1 trillion in economic loss, your brain just doesn't kind of go, "Oh, that's weird."
Yeah, think about all those people who didn't want all the Asians in this country, and now look at Silicon Valley and probably like go kick their stupid boomer grandparents. It's like, you was going to prevent this from coming in here? I love Uber. Anyways, what happens to Americans couple with children commits a crime and goes to prison? What happens to the children? Yeah, you answer.
We
that
answer
one,
that. Yeah. One.
So you try to pass yourself off as a libertarian. I think you may need to research the ideal a bit more. Try joining the left and working yourself to the right.
Okay.
All respect to you, but I think you need someone more understanding.
Okay, so I imagine that this is probably somebody who is conservative or probably alt-right. And as these people generally, when I talk to them, have been paying attention to politics since Trump. And so they don't really know much about politics or how government works or how anything works. They just have these sets of assumptions that they bring to the table. If you want to be real honest, open borders are the only tenable libertarian position, because you are stagnating the flow of a commodity. You are basically tariffing human labor. You are setting up fences and using force to keep people from freely flowing. So I'm not going to say that you can't be a libertarian if you aren't an open borders person, but you sure as shit can't be a closed borders person. Like, I just don't think that's a tenable position. I don't think that if you really study the issue of immigration, if you read something other than the Heritage Foundation research, which the Heritage Foundation cherry picks their data to make immigration tenable and work economically, and their stats are just bullshit. And they constantly are refuted by people like Cato. So I just don't think that you can really be a libertarian and be a closed borders person. And this strain of people who somehow think that the conservative view on Like, there's this group of people who call themselves libertarian who don't believe libertarian things like closed borders. Like, so you, sir, don't understand libertarianism. I've been around for 10 years. I have read a lot about this issue because it's something that challenges me, and it still challenges me. I may be 5 years from now going, I'm a totally open borders person. I may get there, you know. I've definitely evolved on the issue. And when you actually start looking at facts and figures and data and economic impacts and just from a moral standpoint, you're wrong.
Yeah. No, those are about the good ones that okay. I pick out. Everything else you just pretty much answered.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a... Let me address the right, since we're here. It's time for the I told you so portion.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2015, I've been saying Donald Trump is someone who doesn't have any character. Okay, he's a transactional person, which means that Donald Trump occasionally does things that I like. Sometimes my guide star is what is best for liberty, what is best for freeing people mm-hmm. from the tyranny of the state. And Donald Trump does some good things for libertarians and for libertarian ideology. But at the end of the day, it doesn't make him a moral character. And, you know, I think when you're arguing for state terror against immigrants by separating 2,000 kids from their parents, that's using violence to send a message to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's immoral. No, if I believe in the rule of law, so if we have laws in the books, they should be followed, but it also doesn't mean that you have to apply the law at the very strictest levels of the law. And he's doing this to send a message for political purposes. It's just crass and it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a real problem when your values change because your party's in the White House.
Yep.
True principles are constants that are used to correct the entropy of human behavior. So as human beings pull and move and change and destroy and create, we have to have those guide stars that really keep us in place. And we talked a lot about understanding what your values are in the last episode. You know, the Bible, for instance, is the most significant instrument of human liberty in the world. And it's being used to justify terror, and it's gross. And so I think it's a real wake-up call for conservatives and Trump supporters when the entire world starts to go, this is wrong. Even people like me who are independent and will give the president a fair shake, this is not good. And you're still defending it. I think you really need to think about where you're at and what you're doing, because you don't want to be a useful idiot. You should come from a place of truth. So if you've done your homework and you really believe that this policy is okay, fine. But I just don't get the sense in talking to many people on Facebook over the last week that they understand what they're talking about. Because I did the research and I worked really hard because, listen, if Rich Lowry's article in the National Review had been totally right, I would be leading with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know me well enough.
Yes. Yeah, we're just like, yeah, we just told like, this is what's really going on. This is what's going on. We've done it before in the past.
Oh, God. Here come the atheist libertarians. Wrong about the Bible and liberty. Okay.
No.
All right, I won't. We'll stick to the subject. I get so tired. Like, insulting people's religion and insulting the truth of the Bible being a great instrument of human liberty. It has been used to justify some bad things, like keeping kids in cages, like slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, it leads so many people to personal liberty. It's the church in the darkest times, while the church systemically was broken at the top. I don't want to get into it. You're right. Just move
See?
On.
Yeah. Yep. There you go.
I hate...
Just let it go.
Trust me, if you think I don't like conservatives after tonight, go listen to two episodes when I hated on the left.
Mm-hmm.
listen to every episode and realize I hate libertarians the most. For the left. So I've consistently said that the hyperbole used about Donald Trump is a problem. Because there's going to come a day and time when something will truly be wrong and no one is listening to you anymore.
Right.
And so part of the problem in trying to have a conversation with Trump supporters about this and why they don't understand the truth is because you guys can't stop screaming, he's literally Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
So crafting public opinion is a very important thing, and it requires a lot of responsibility, and the left has not used that over the last 3 years. And we are seeing some of the consequences now. And the fact that the left can't control themselves and have to make everything the greatest scandal in history, the Russia investigation being number one, and it's completely a phony investigation at this point, you are partly responsible for the misery of these kids being prolonged because nobody believes the boy that cried wolf anymore. So use your words wisely. But I don't know. It's been a depressing story for me because, and two counts. Like, to me, America has, oh, if you look at the history of America, America, by and large, yes, we have done things that have, you know, slavery was a bad thing, Harry.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I'm sure you're against it, even though your family were slave traders.
Yes. Yes.
But we're the country that ended slavery. We're the country that gave women the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We're the country that
fought a war to end slavery.
Yeah. We're a country, by and large, that does good things.
Mm-hmm.
We're a country that, even though I don't agree with humanitarian aid, does humanitarian aid. We're the ones who invented that.
Right.
Everybody else was colonial. We were inventing foreign aid.
We disagree with the idea of trying to be the world's policeman, but the United States Navy, that's what they do.
Had a pretty peaceful past 70 years, thanks to the United States.
Yeah. The United States Navy ensures that most ships make it from port to port to port and not getting stuff with Somali pirates. That's why you heard like this bip of pirates, and then you stopped. The United States Navy took care of them.
Right. Yes. The reason that the world is better because of America is because America puts liberty and freedom first. And we help the downtrodden.
Mm-hmm.
And we use our place of privilege. And I don't say that in the SJW way. I mean that in the sense that we are a rich country that can do a lot of good around the world. At least that's the story that we tell ourselves.
Right.
If it's just a fairy tale phony story that we tell ourselves, then we're not an exceptional nation.
Yep.
But we need to live up to that tag of being exceptional. We need to live up to that tag of being a country that values human life, that thinks that treating the least of us are important, at least in a decent way. We're not the type of country that uses terrorism for political purposes. And it's just disturbing to me to see so many people say that's okay. And I think that's been the toughest part about this.
Yeah, they just dismiss it.
Yep.
Just let it go.
It's fine. It's hey, these people deserve it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they need to come here legally with it, ignoring everything that they've gone through to get where they are or what they're fleeing from.
Yeah. Yeah. I just
and the natural disasters, the gang violence,
like empathy to me is an important value, and I think if you are trying to craft policy, you have to really think about the human cost of that policy.
Mm-hmm.
And many people are not able to extend that empathy of themselves and their family to these human beings because they're brown.
Yep. And it's not like the United States government doesn't do this to its own citizens. If there's several episodes of The Cost of watching, mm-hmm. Them doing that to, U.S. citizens.
Yep. All right, Harry, let's end this. My voice is going. Can you hear it? It's a little weak.
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to say that so you can shout at Roger face to face.
Yes, I am going to Porkfest tomorrow. I have a flight at 7:30 a.m. I will be at Porkfest tomorrow evening and then all day Friday, and then I come back Saturday.
No, it's going to feel weird. You at Porkfest, not me.
Not you.
No, this is weird.
I know.
All okay. Right.
Harry, final thoughts.
The thing is, what, now this is something that I try to get to different people, and this has helped me with some people at my job and discussing borders with them, because my policy is borders are silly things that governments and things create. And then I like to take them just on a drive around the town and show them how often we will cross town borders. As I will cross into Lawrence, to Indianapolis, to McCordsville, to Fortville, you know, Hancock County, Marion County, drawing all around Unigov, going into Speedway. These are technically borders. I'm crossing into town. Now, granted, they're like, whoa, they're part of this same system. Yes, but even though they have their own same towns, rules, laws, taxes, they have all these different police jurisdictions. They have all these different things that you, from these different lines. But you are free to cross this for travel, for commerce, because there's part of this one union that they have. That's it. That's all you needed. That's what makes it okay. This way, to me, that they're just different lines of different organizations have different tax reasons. And within it, it's 2018. It's current year. If you can't collect taxes from people because you want your theft money so bad and you want people to follow your rules in your little town, guess what? They break the law here. We deal with them. That's what the United States do. That's what we do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, assuming that everybody who crosses the border is automatically a bad person who has committed a crime, like crossing a border is a victimless crime.
Yeah, victimless crime.
And you can concoct some fairy tale that it's a victim, it causes this blah, 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 yeah. It's this moral, it's not, it's a victimless crime.
Yeah.
60 some percent of the people who were deported last year committed a victimless crime.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, enforcement, Obama really focused on the people who were violent, the gang members. We have limited resources, and from a practical standpoint, focus on the people who are the most violent, the people who are the least valuable to our society, and get them the hell out of here.
Yep. Capitalism will teach us to, we have, the United States government is supposed to have scarce resources of cash, of theft money they've stolen from us.
Right.
So they use this scarce resources, and they should spend it wisely, just burning money to go after everything and everything, that's not capitalism. That's statism on parade. If that had a budget, they would have blown through it. They wouldn't be able to protect the border for the rest of the months then.
Right.
But they're allowed to keep ballooning and get putting more money. And when you think that money's going to come from, it's got to come from somewhere.
Right.
It's not free. You can protect the border, but it ain't going to be free. There's no free lunch. Just like for everything else, that has to come from, those are jobs, those are buildings, those things are heated, they're cool, there's food, there's all kinds of different things are in play there.
Right.
It's got to come from somewhere. You want to balance the budget, not pay for the other stuff? Well, guess what? Catch and release means you don't have to pay for it. So.
All right. Well, Harry, it was good to have you back.
Good to be back. I like being back. I like seeing all the comments of everyone's happy to see me back. I'm actually shocked all these people was happy to see me.
Well, if you love,
I have missed this place.
If you love some Harry, then how can you watch Low Key Wall?
You can watch Low Key Wall. You can either subscribe to the Patreon feed and get that one, or you can also get it live on Friday nights on twitch.tv. We move from Wednesday nights to Friday nights. I might move it back to Wednesday night because, you know, it's a little rough, but I kind of like the Friday nights thing because I might even open back up the old studio in the basement of my house and then just invite Reinhold and Paul just down to the basement of the studio at my house right after we leave Liberty and chill.
Fun.
Yeah, should be fun.
All right. For my part, I want to thank Christy Avery, Craig DaCosta, and Jason Doolittle for their support of We Are Libertarians, and to everyone who funded my trips to Porkfest. I forget your names right now, but I greatly appreciate it. I am a little too tired to I should write that down.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our Patreon supporters, you guys are making it happen. You guys are allowing me to travel and cover events and give you the what's up. What's hap? What do the kids say now? The what's happening? Is that what they say?
Why would you look for me to see what's happening?
I know. You're less cool than I am.
Yep. I had to go pick up my dad's shoes the other day.
Did you get a pair of New Balance or Nikes?
I went for the New Balance.
Okay. All right. I'm a Nike man, but I'll forgive you. All right. Thanks for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. I will be recording live Friday morning. I won't be live, but I will be recording Friday morning, and then I'll post it when I get back on Sunday.
If you're going to get up on Friday, don't forget to find Ernest Hancock. See if you can go side Ernest Hancock.
Okay. I will. He should be the one screaming in the middle of Porkfest. Mm-hmm. He's easy to find.
Yep.
And I will be at the National Libertarian Convention. So if you're going, please drop me a note at editor@wearelibertarians.com. I would love to meet up with listeners. I need to set up like an official get together. I think I tasked Paul with that, but I don't think he's done it yet. So I need to crack the whip. So thanks for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. If you got something out of this, if you felt that this was helpful, then please share with your friends unashamedly. Tell them, hey, this is what's actually going on. I would greatly appreciate it. Your shares, your word of mouth is really one of the best ways that we grow. And we want to reach as many people and keep spreading the message of libertarianism. So thank you for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians, and we will see you next week.